Okay, I looks like I'm hot now. I'm gonna bring. I see Monica in the back room, so we'll bring Monica in. Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. Hey, Monica, welcome to the Flood Show, and thanks for joining us today. It's great
I'm
that you could
just,
join
yeah, I'm
us.
so happy. I looked at my little calendar last night and I say, oh yeah, tomorrow's the day. I got to set my alarm clock.
Yeah. It's a pretty early show, but I do appreciate that people get up early to come on, and we've had several guests, and it's the first time that you've been on, and again, thanks for joining. And I don't think I'm not sure if all my audience knows you, but of course, a lot of them do. But could you just like briefly introduce yourself and kind of tell us a little bit of your own history? You've also got quite a history and background.
Okay, certainly. So, I basically was, asleep at the wheels, so to speak, until around 2011. And then my brother Alfred and I, we went down this journey of waking up, like checking things out, learning. He was the first to figure out that 9/11 was well, the official story was not true about what happened on that day, and that was 10 years after 9/11. So, and then I immediately jumped on board with him, and because nothing had ever made sense to me anyway about it, but I just hadn't really delved into it. And then, yeah, we went down that rabbit hole together. A couple of years later, figured out, whoa, this big World War II story about the Holocaust, that's all false. So
Yeah.
that then he was, Alfred lives in Germany, by the way. Like, we're all Canadian. We grew up in Canada, but he reverse migrated. Our parents came over from Germany in the 50s, then had their family here in Canada. Then he moved back to Germany as an adult and ended up staying there. So anyway, he was already making some good educational videos when I went to visit him in 2016, and then made my little short little video, 6 minute video called "Sorry, Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust." And then that's what kind of set things in motion, changed my life completely, and I have never had any regrets about it, even though from the outside looking in, it might look like, gee, I wonder if she wishes she hadn't done that. No, nothing could be further from the truth. Everything turned out, I think, the way things are meant to turn out in life, because I cannot imagine myself now doing anything else other than, this role that I don't know how is it that Alfred and I have both been given this task in life, you could say. Trying to enlighten our brothers and sisters and about what's going on, our people, right? Because we are being genocided as like that's what our enemy wishes to do, but we are going to stop this, and it's we will come out on top. The truth always does win, and our enemy is just full of lies and deception. Those we're not allowed to criticize, lest we be called anti-Semitic. So anyway, went to jail for almost a year, 10 months to be precise, in 2018 for that little video. Anybody can still find it online. It's called "Sorry, Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust." And afterwards, I wrote a book with the same title. And these days, I'm doing things like this, talking to folks like you, really doing my best, trying to help other people understand. Because once upon a time, I was also completely duped by it all, was very trusting, believed that our parents, or well, it's actually not our parents, but the teachers and everything were being told out there. That they're, why would they be lying to us, and how could they be lying to us? Like, that just doesn't happen, right?
Yeah, it's
So,
shocking. It's shocking when you find this stuff out and you find that you've been betrayed, and it's a lot to deal with. And I think a lot of people don't process that immediately. Did it take you time to kind of deal with the idea that they've lied about all these things, and then you begin to kind of realize what it's really cost everybody to go along with these lies? It's shocking because it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger the more you look. Well, you were incarcerated. Number one, bless your soul for standing up and answering the call. I think that we all will eventually get the call to stand up for the freedom of our people.
I like the way you articulated that, you know, answering the call. That's good. I like that. You know, I would say at the time it felt like I was learning everything so fast. You know, it was just like the onion was just peeling one layer after another. But now I have to tell you that when I see some of the younger, especially younger people, when they are figuring it out, oh, they're figuring out so fast, like really lightning speed. And perhaps it's because things out there are accelerating so much, you know, that the agenda is unfolding. Like, I mean, they are just pulling out all the stops so that you could say they're in panic mode or something, but you know, they're just doing things so much faster now. And but when people wake up now, they seem to get it a lot faster. The process of learning and awakening is quicker now, which is really good because it has to be.
I agree. I think the younger generation is picking it up very, very quickly. We're also joined now by Paul Fromm, who was actually leading a protest at the prison outside of where Leslie is incarcerated. Is that correct? Welcome to the show, Paul, and thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, we have had, I've actually lost track, but I think we have had 8 protests this year outside Maplehurst Detention Center in Milton, Ontario, and that's about 40 miles north and west of Toronto, to kind of place it for your listeners, for Les Borie. And the protests have a number of purposes. Number one is just simply, as they say in religious circles, to testify to by our presence and by our words to say what is being done to him is wrong. Secondly, it's to because it will be an internet presence to inform a lot of people. And of course, word gets back, and it makes him more of a personality in prison. And of course, it's encouraging to him. His mail is very heavily censored. I publish a monthly newsletter on free speech and one on immigration. He's been a subscriber for, I guess, going back to about 2016 or so. 2018, and they regularly return from to me from prison with all sorts of bureaucratic nonsense. They can't have photocopies from newspapers. Well, these aren't photocopies, or they can't have revolutionary or salacious material. That's not what this is. In ways large and small, they mistreat a political prisoner, and that's what he is. He's a political prisoner as defined by Amnesty International, and their definition is that a person who is jailed or punished solely because of the nonviolent expression of his political views or social or religious views is a political prisoner. Well, that's all Les was ever doing with his Brampton TV podcast, and in the particular broadcast that got him into so much trouble. He was talking about major threats that this country faces, including the Zionist power, and he was urging people to stand up and act. Those are political views. They may not be very popular in certain quarters, but they are. I want to comment on what Monica was saying. I too have noticed a tremendous awakening among people. I was deeply involved in the freedom protests during the COVID craziness. I think, well, I've been to some since then, but I think my total is that I've now been up to about 135 protests in about 30 cities in Ontario and British Columbia. So I've become a professional protester. But at these gatherings, you find people that have, some have been, you know, in the freedom conscious for many years. Others are very new. And especially with the new ones, they learn fast, because I think as this was the case with Monica's brother and
Alfred
and also with her, they once believed other things, and once they felt that they'd been lied to on one thing, and that was the way it was with Alfred, and then that was 9/11 and all the you know, misinformation and lies around there. It's far easier then to believe that you might be lied to about other things. I remember I didn't get to go to the Freedom Truckers Freedom Convoy in Ottawa. That lasted almost a month, but we had support rallies in various cities across the country for those who couldn't go. So I was at one in Toronto. It was bitterly cold February Saturday, and some fellow in this where the rally was in Queen's Park came up to me and said, "Have you heard about the protocols?" And I said, oh, yeah, masking protocol, vaccine protocol. No, he said, the protocols of the Elders of Zion. It explains everything. And I said, well, yeah, I kind of heard about them 50 years ago. But no, I wasn't to put them down. But the information now spreads far faster just on that book alone. Of course, it's been around since 1905. But when I first got involved in politics in the late 60s, yes, the odd copy was floating around, and you know, with great difficulty, you might be able to track one down. And eventually, if you brought it in from the States, Canada customs censors would steal it. Now, they're so incompetent that fortunately that didn't happen very often. But to get a copy would be, well, first of all, to find out about it would be difficult. But if you found out about it, to get a copy would take a lot of effort. Now, you can get it on the internet. You can just read it there. And so I see knowledge circulating a lot faster. So I'm
become fucking jacked as fuck with hate.
We're getting a donation. Sorry about that.
Great guests as usual.
I should turn that
Thanks,
off. That's
going
to make a loop.
Love.
Let me mute this real quickly.
Okay.
And I gotta kill this audio. I forgot to turn that one off. Let's see. I think that would do it right there. Now let me unmute this. So I have an audio problem that we'll get a super loop that will never end if right. I don't catch those things really quickly and put them down. So if that happens, I'll mute out and I won't be able to hear you for a moment. But man, all this audio wizardry to put on a live stream, sometimes you have to become a bit of an engineer. I apologize for that interruption. But guys, thanks for the support, and I will read those super chats and any questions that you might have for our guests as well as we get toward the end of the interview. Paul, I noticed.
Well, that's one of my comments.
Okay. We actually, I turned the protocols into an audio book, I think a few months ago. And I think if I recall right, I do some propaganda media. I think I had John Hagee, who's an American televangelist, read the protocols via some deepfake technology. When I looked up your name and I was basically just making sure that I had the spelling correctly, I found your name on the ADL website as a white supremacist extremist. And I think that's kind of a badge of honor, really, in most cases. But you are a very prolific activist. That's, you've mentioned that you've been to hundreds of protests. You understand the importance of being present in the field and what the real value of real life activism is. Could you elaborate a little bit on that? Could you give us your thoughts on the importance of actual activism and kind of the difference between just being an online, an online pushing information versus actually showing up and being present for people?
Well, it's activism in the end that's going to turn things around. I think the whole situation is in much of the world is very volatile. You know, the fall of the Syrian the Assad government just over the past weekend, even the specialists thought that they were relatively safe and secure, but when things begin to fall apart, I think that there's I'm not talking just about the Middle East, but I think there's a real fragility. A lot of people are fed up. A lot of people are realize they've been lied to, or in the process of finding out. And things are really volatile. Well, you can make a difference if you take a stand, if you're out there. Being a keyboard commando, not to denigrate people who express their views on the internet, that's good. But I have known a lot of people who are, they'll take on a really militant name, like there's one person I got to know earlier in the year. He had some, really militant name like Panzer 88 or something like that.
Yep, I know a few.
but when to get him to do anything, he was scared. He's a big guy. He didn't have a lot of reason to be afraid, but even to come to a protest, a safe protest. We try as much as possible to run safe protests. We choose the time and the place, say, to support Les Borey. We're not trying to get into a conflict with Antifa or other problems. We're trying to create a safe environment. But even that, he was so afraid. Maybe the police the police don't even know you. I was trying to point out to him. And I think for some people, unfortunately, it's really just a hobby. It's a good hobby. Maybe they influence the odd person. But I think action of whatever sort is important. And it could be even as elementary as sending you some money because, the activist, requires support. Once you're out there. You're doing things that require money, that involve costs, but also in some cases you've sacrificed everything. Alfred, of course, was retired, but Monica suffered financially for her activism, not in Germany, but in her own hometown, and she can of course tell you much more about that than I can. But we live in a very judgmental and very nasty environment, and we're at war. So people that do put themselves out and do get into trouble require support rather than just a pat on the back.
That's such a great point. That a lot of people do get canceled. Of course, the political left, the activist left, Antifa. Many of these groups are funded by money, usually dark money. A lot of these folks have support that our guys don't have. They have they're kind of indemnified in the eyes of the law as well. Especially in America recently, we've seen a lot of leftist activists who can commit all kinds of crimes and just walk away. While if you just say the wrong thing, if you're on the political right, or if you're, empathetic with the Third Reich or any of those things, if you have the wrong symbol on your jacket, you can be debanked, deplatformed, and I'm glad that you mentioned the Monica's situation too, because she did go to jail, and tell us a little bit more, Monica, about some of the consequences that have come from your activism.
Yeah. Okay. I've just while I was. Can you hear me still?
Yes.
Okay. Sounds good. Because I changed around. Finally remember to put headphones on and this and that. I guess I hadn't prepared properly this morning for the technical parts of it. But anyway, that's good. So yeah, like Paul just briefly mentioned my hometown, something very interesting happened there. And I became an expert on this thing called ritual defamation. And I think I had all the perfect set of ingredients for a really like textbook case, if you can call it, you know, a textbook case of ritual defamation at its maximum, because it's a small town, about 5,000, maybe a bit more than 5,000 people population wise. And then it's its own entity. It's not like a bedroom community where people commute elsewhere. People live, work, play there, right? And I had been there already at that time 34, 35 years when I did that very, very forbidden thing. Before that, I was kind of what you would call a prominent, you know, community person. And some people called me a community leader. And that's not in an elected sense, but a community leader. Other people called me that. I didn't call myself that. I had been on many different boards. I had written many, many letters to the editor of the local newspaper over the years. I was out there organizing, you know, peace marches when this or that or the other war broke out. And I was really well known. Plus, I was going all over the place with my violin, volunteering at the long-term care wing in the hospital, playing there regularly, playing at the school for functions, just as a volunteer. I was also professional musician, as in I had students and I was playing gigs. So I was kind of well known in this little town and very involved. I wasn't just, you know, kind of sitting back after my 9-to-5 job and put my feet up on the table and have a beer and watch TV. No, I was really well known in the community. And so then when I did this thing, I guess they had to take me down. That's how the enemy operates. They have to, you know, shut it down.
That's right.
So they went at me with all forces, all guns blazing. And you know, the Gentiles, the non-Jewish people, who have been duped will just they'll just rally to the cause. And the Jews are really behind this big. And I found out then that there were quite a few Jews in Jasper. I didn't know that before. Some of my former friends, I never thought to ask people, oh, are you Jewish? Are you this? Are you that? It just didn't even occur to me all that time previous to me waking up. And even after I woke up, I still didn't go around, you know, doing a what do you call it? Like,
you weren't doing your own noticing, your own Jew naming at the time.
No, I didn't. It didn't occur to me. Like when you do when a questionnaire, you know,
right.
I'm going to send out a questionnaire to all my friends. Are you
Jewish? I grew up in the Midwest. We didn't know even what a Jew was. Like, we didn't realize that they were different in any way. We just heard the term, and there weren't any in the Midwest. If you grew up in the East Coast, you probably had more exposure, but
we
didn't know any Jews. Similar.
We had words in our language, but we didn't realize the root of the word, like to get Jewed. You know, oh, you got Jewed because you got ripped off, right? We didn't put two and two together that actually has a background meaning, you know. So anyway, yeah, so that was what happened. And of course, they make sure you cannot earn a living anymore. That's part of it. But there's so much more to it. I mean, literally getting spat at in the street and screamed at. And I mean, it was incredible. Actually, it was quite it's a dizzying experience. When I look back at it now, I almost get dizzy. But I have to say, I did stand up tall to it. Like every day, I had to actually gather up my strength, take some really good deep breaths, and I had to rally myself. I had to give myself a pep talk. Okay, Monica, go out the door now. Open the door and go downtown. And I would. I would walk downtown, do my chores, go to the post office, whatever, go to the grocery store and just stand tall and be friendly. And I had all kinds of interesting experiences. And so every day when I returned back home, I was just so happy that I had done that. And I was still there. And some experiences were good and some were bad. Like sometimes people would have this terror in their eyes when they saw me coming. And then I would just be my normal self and, oh, hi. Actually, I'm just going to, let me just see here. I'm going to, I was going to do this before. Oh, this chat is in the way. I've got to put that down. But here you go. I mean, I just say, hi, wave and be friendly. And then this look of horror would disappear. But I wasn't always sure, was it a friendliness that they would, greet me with after that? Or was it just that they were relieved that, this one lady, she said, are you okay? Are you okay, Monica? Like with a horrified look in her face. Are you okay? And I, oh yeah, I'm doing great. And then, okay, she was relieved, but I wasn't sure if she was just relieved that I was doing okay or I don't know. I couldn't interpret, was she still just, did she really care about my well-being? Or what? I don't know. It was very strange. Some people cross the street to the other side, or I would say, oh, hi, Joe. And Joe would just, don't talk to me again ever,
Isn't that remarkable that their rhetoric can cause people that have known each other for sometimes their entire lives to mistrust each other and to not and to suddenly be apprehensive or fearful of one another? It's such a scam that they do, painting people with these brushes that we've been called terrorists. We've been called just about everything under the sun. But it is strange that they have such a power over the perception of people.
Yeah, I've been through something similar some years ago, and I won't go into that now. But Monica's story really points out a number of things. Number one, Canadian self-image is really delusional. We like to think of ourselves as we're nice people. Americans are kind of brash and loud. French are arrogant and so on. But we're nice. No, we're not nice. Monica was a real force in that town of Jasper for years. Volunteering for things, giving, always there for people. And the minute she was denounced in the press for having had a question about the Big H, not everybody, but many people turned on her. And I would ask myself, well, okay, I know this woman. I don't understand this Holocaust stuff, and maybe she's wrong, but she's still a good person. And yet many people treated her suddenly against their own personal experiences as, a demon, somebody to be destroyed. And that's the thing about cultural Marxism or the form of communism we have in North America is that it is total destruction. I remember saying after one incident to a Bulgarian friend of mine who lived under communism, grew up under communism, and came to Canada. And I said, something or other, some attack on free speech, this is communism. And he said to me, no, this is worse than communism. Because when I was back in Bulgaria, you could be, if you were a political dissident, well, at the extreme end, at least for the last 20 years of communism. They could put you in jail. But they couldn't take away your job. And I said, well, why not? He said, because you didn't have the right to be a parasite under communism. And so they couldn't take away your job, because if they took away your job as a teacher, they'd have to give you a job as something else, because you couldn't be a parasite. And I thought, wow. The way they will destroy you in Canada and the U.S. and Britain, yes, they can put you in jail. But even if they don't put you in jail, they didn't put Monica in jail in Canada, but they tried to destroy her. I mean, if you're on welfare, like if you don't have your own private means and if you're reduced to welfare, well, you know, it's a bare subsistence. Yes. I thought that was one of those remarks that really stick in your mind. It's worse than communism, what we have here.
You're absolutely right. And, we're joined by Dave Gahari. Welcome, Dave. And you've got a lot of experience as well in the it's the opposite of a safety net. If the law can't punish you, they've got society arranged where society will punish you, or the banking system or the corporations. They have multiple ways of oppressing us now, where maybe before or in other countries or in history, I don't think they had such a comprehensive system of oppression in place. Dave, you've had recent experience with losing payment processors, right? Over speech.
Yes. Yes. Good morning, Flood, Monica, Paul.
Good morning.
Great to hear and see you heroes. I just want to make a quick comment that what Paul had mentioned about Bulgaria, I think it was, communist,
yes,
country. It's worse in Canada. My wife is from Czechoslovakia, so she was born prior to Prague Spring, and so she got to witness what it was like. And when she came here to the United States in 95, it was still kind of the United States. But since then, of course, she's woken up to what's going on. And she has remarked many times that the state of this country currently, and of course Canada and the UK, is much worse than it ever was as far as vis-a-vis communism than it was there. And I think what Paul said about, you know, nobody had a right to be a parasite. You had to work. That's why you wouldn't lose your job. We obviously don't have that here. And nor is it in Canada or the UK or.
We have an entire parasite class.
Exactly. Exactly. Caste, right.
Caste.
Yes, right. That too. The parasite class. And the payment processors for me, it's funny how so much has happened even in the past 10 years. You know, Money Tree Publishing began in January of 2017. Things were much different back then. Moonrock Books started in December of 2015. So roughly 10 years, 9 years. And at that time, Jim Fetzer had just approached me and said, you know, my book got banned on Amazon. And I was like, what are you talking about? Banned on it? Well, that didn't make sense. It didn't compute. Because that sort of thing was not fashionable as it is now.
Yeah, Amazon was they were books 10 years ago, right?
Right.
They were
exactly. Yeah, it was just, okay, books. Anybody could say whatever they want. Just like the internet was, you know, the Wild West. And I said, Jim, what are you talking? There's no such a thing as that. And sure enough, I found out the book was banned. And that's why we actually started Moonrock Books, because Amazon banned that book because I was revolted by that, and how dare they do that? And when Money Tree started in January of 2017, it didn't start because I said or anybody said, hey, why don't you start a publishing company with books that talk about the eternal enemy? The way that happened was a Canadian, Greg Felton, was about to, you know, throw in the towel. Because the book he had written, The Host and the Parasite, How Israel's Fifth Column Consumed America, he had you know, drawn, obviously, the opprobrium and disgust, as we've been talking about here, as Monica had mentioned, you know, people just scorning her and, you know, just looking at her like she's, you know, something horrible. Felton felt the pressure, you know, from people and from his family. And he said, I'm just going to quit. And I said, Greg, this book is too important. So that's how Money Tree started. And then obviously other things happened, and that's why it looks the way it did. But January 14th, 2017, one book and no problem with PayPal. You know, that was like kind of the default processor, you know, the default payment processor.
That's right. They were the only way to do payments back then too. That's right.
Yeah, so we went with them, and then, you know, we used them for our different imprints. I think at the time we had three, Moon Rock Books Publishing, Money Tree Publishing, and Rockstar Publishing, which was for the USS Liberty stuff. And everything was fine. We never had one chargeback because we run a tight ship. Everything was perfect. You know, you used PayPal for the payment. You used PayPal to create the shipping label. And, you know, people would come onto the website from all over the world. A very large percentage of non-U.S., predominantly Canada, U.K., and Australia, but all the other countries in between. And they would get whatever they want. The label would be created. It would be sent out. And that went on for, obviously, 4 years. And then all of a sudden, one day in August, early in the morning, I remember the date. I'm burdened with remembering most dates. It was August 28th of 2019. And it stopped working, you know, like 5 a.m. I was like, what's going on? And that was when it started, the canceling. And they canceled not just all of the business accounts, but they canceled my and my wife's personal PayPal accounts, which I really didn't use PayPal that much. My wife didn't use PayPal that much, but they took that out. No explanation, no reason. At one point, I even wrote a letter to PayPal legal department in San Francisco. Never got a reply. Of course, they don't have to. They don't care. Screw you. We don't owe you anything. And that was, you know, literally the beginning of all this stuff. Now, all of us who are awake, which is not a very large number, unfortunately, like those imbeciles who were scorning Monica, you know, because of what the Jews media said. Most of the world is comprised of morons who can't think beyond what they're told to think. So nowadays, of course, a lot of people are ready to fight. And I think we see that in the Trump election. You push, you know, a certain segment of the population far enough, then something inside of them, even though they might not understand all the complexities of it, rebel. And they're like, no, screw this. That's it. No, you're not going to go that far. You know, I don't, you know, I'm not a Republican. You know, I don't like this guy, Trump, but I don't like the way that it's going. And I think that, you know, compared to the end of August 2019, and now we're like worlds away from that, you know, in a psychological sense.
Oh, yeah. Things have changed so rapidly, and it seems to be increasing exponentially. You know, you mentioned that you remember dates and it's a bit of a curse, but that actually makes a great point. And I think you've actually already kind of segued to it, but it seems like the big push came after Trump's first election. Once he actually won in 2016, it seemed like there was an immediate war declared on the right by the left.
Exactly.
And you saw all of the corporations, you really saw the media come mask off. And everybody went after not just Trump, but all of the people that voted for Trump, all of the people that were in the populist kind of movement. There was kind of an upwelling of a populist spirit in America. I think that it happened around the world at the same time, but it looked like for the first time, the people were going to get one thing that they wanted. And the reaction to that was just full on war by corporations, by NGOs, by governments and the authorities. Did it look the same way in Canada at, around the same time, Monica? Do you think that was about the time that they really went after all of us?
Well, from my point of view, something happened after Charlottesville. The usual suspects, I would expect that probably the ADL in the United States, gave a hit list to all sorts of people who provide financial services, for receiving money to PayPal and so on. One April morning in 2018, I went to my computer and found out I'd been canceled on PayPal. Now, I did have PayPal. I hardly ever used it. I used it for virtually nothing political. And I got canceled for a repeated violation of terms of service. Well, as you know, Dave said, you appeal, or you, but you're just shouting into a vacuum. And that happened to so many people in the movement, many of whom had nothing to do with Charlottesville. I wasn't at Charlottesville.
It's a great point. It really was Charlottesville. I think you're right. It was more Charlottesville than Trump. It was Charlottesville that really set it off.
The Institute for Historical Review had nothing to do with Charlottesville. It was on the other side of the country, and participating in rallies like that wouldn't be their thing. But all sorts of organizations and people got canceled, and it is still the same, regrettably, on Twitter. I know Elon Musk has done a lot of good things, but Twitter is not, or X now is not free of people being purged. I was purged along on the same day as Dr. Tom Sunek, Dr. Kevin McDonald and James Edwards of the Political Cesspool. One April day last year. Gone on you. I've appealed. We even got a California lawyer to try to deal with the higher ups at Twitter, but it got absolutely nowhere. And when this is done, this is being done by people operating on a hit list that's put out by our enemies. It's absolutely war out there.
I agree. And I think you're right. The ADL probably had a lot to do with it. We saw Jared Taylor still can't get back on Twitter. There's quite a few people that are permanently banned forever.
Duke.
And will not be let. Yes, David Duke.
Yeah, I just want to jump in real quick, and I don't want to step on Monica's toes because she's probably next to speak. I think Paul is right. I was thinking about that prior to him speaking. Charlottesville was huge. I think there's a couple of main triggers that triggered the always in wait left communists. Now, forget about left, communist, Jewish inspired communism. That's what it is. They wait for stuff to happen. When Dylann Roof allegedly went into that church, that black church in Charleston, South Carolina, and killed 9 African Americans, that began the push to come after us. So it's not like the communists are going, oh my God, this is so sad. Look what this guy did. No, they're saying, as Rahm Emanuel said, and it was popularized by what he said, never let a good crisis go to waste. And this is how the communists think. And, of course, Rahm Emanuel was Obama's, I think, chief of staff, and he served in the military, not the U.S. military.
Right.
the IDF, from Chicago, this guy. So Dylann Roof, I think, kicked it off. when Charlottesville happened, and many of your listeners may know that I copy edited Jason Kessler's book on Charlottesville. So I've always been interested in Charlottesville. You know, when the report came out, the Heafy report, named after Tim Heafy, a former U.S. attorney, and it was like 220 pages, and it really studied Charlottesville, that Charlottesville event, very well, and even the events leading up to it. It was clear that, you know, the right did nothing. They were set up by the Charlottesville police department because of what happened actually in earlier in the summer, which was a KKK march, which coincidentally, I think it was like right after Kessler applied for the permit in Charlottesville, the KKK applied for a permit, and they had their little protest or demonstration. And of course, the usual suspects, the counter protesters, the anti-fascists came out, and the police actually did their job. Because the left is almost always violent and radical.
Yes.
They held them at bay, and they had to use tear gas on them because they're uncontrollable. When that happened, the left-leaning Charlottesville city government made sure that the half-white, half-black police chief, Al Thomas, knew when Unite the Right begins, do not do that to the counter protesters. I don't care what they do. So he was given the order, and they were actually allowed to fight. In fact, the police chief was caught on tape saying, by people who are around, and he didn't deny it. It's true. Let them fight. It will make it easier to declare an unlawful assembly. So Charlottesville was probably not the best place to have a Unite the Right rally, because at that time, Charlottesville, it's much worse now, was completely occupied by communists. You know, you saw these leftists walking around naked, tattoos, piercings, the whole nine yards. But it happened. Charlottesville happened. They used it. Never let a good crisis go to waste. That was 2017. Kessler was immediately attacked. In fact, Charlottesville was the main event, as Paul was saying, that kicked off the whole censorship tsunami that has come after us. It started at Charlottesville. And of course, Trump was in just for about 8 months in office. And yes, also what you said, Flood, is completely accurate, was that it was because of Trump that the left, always lying in wait, thought, okay, this is how we will push back against Trump. This is how we will push back against populism. This is how we push back against all of these deplorables, half the country, who are completely opposed to what we believe. So yes, that's what happened. And then by the time it got to 2019, you know, 2 years later, because Charlottesville was August 12 and 13 of 2017, so my thing was August 28 of 2019, it was already beginning to build. And now, of course, we lost PayPal. We've been forced to get what are called high-risk processors, because books, I was unaware at the time, books have a propensity to be able to, you think they're inanimate objects, but they're not. They can actually leap off of a desk, I found out, and like wrap themselves around your, they could suffocate you, okay?
So they're violent.
They're violent.
They're violent extremists.
Yes, like guns, exactly, really. Like guns. Guns are gun violence, right? There's book violence. So, and they actually believe this stuff. So we've been through so many processors that, you know, they would last a day, they'd last 3 days, a week, you know, maybe a month, which is odd. They would last over 3 years. And then once the head Jews, because they just look at the numbers, once the head Jews see what's happening, that this particular company, let's say Money Tree Publishing, is producing a lot of business, what you guys said earlier, shut it down.
Shut
and
it
that's
down.
How
that's
they
right.
determine it.
I have a connection with Dylann Roof, or at least the authorities seem to think so. After Dylann Roof did what he did, he made a number of statements, and one of them was that he learned about black crime from the Council of Conservative Citizens. Now, I was an international director of the council and been involved for a good number of years. Suddenly, absolutely everything went wrong for us. Venues canceled, even a venue we had in Nashville, which we used for a fair number of times without any problems. Just absolutely all hell broke loose. Even though we had nothing to do with Roof. Roof had never been a member. To the best of our knowledge, he never approached us. And if he had to look on the council website to find out about black crime, he must be brain dead. You can't live in a major American city, south of Alaska, and not, I mean, it's part of the common knowledge of Americans in urban areas. There are certain areas that are no-go areas, and it's not because of Greenlanders. Anyway, there was just total mad repression. But then not very long afterwards, having visited the United States since I was about 10 years old and, speaking there on numerous occasions, I've been banned from the U.S. Well, it's hard to know exactly banned, but they've given me the rigmarole for 7 or 8 years since then. I keep saying this, but we are in a war, and the enemy has absolutely no restraint. Something I think people can do in terms of activism is simply to comment when people are being suppressed or denigrated, as Monica was, to try to throw the supposed principles that we have in Canada and the United States back in people's faces. Like I think it would have been so helpful for Monica if there'd be more people there who would say, when somebody's going on about you've got to avoid her and all that, doesn't she have the right to free speech? I mean, she's got a right to her opinion. That we claim to believe, or our society claims to believe in that, up until you have an opinion that the big boys in Tel Aviv don't like.
The pressure was so big, Paul, that actually it's interesting. Just in July this year, there was the big fire in Jasper, right? One third of the homes in Jasper burnt down, a major, major event. So the people were evacuated all over the place, and some of them were here in the little town where I live, which is not that far away, right? So a couple of guys that I ran into in front of the grocery store here, they were acquaintances. One of them was an acquaintance from way before. I actually didn't even remember his name. Like, we didn't know each other that well, but just when you live in a town for that many years as I did, everybody's familiar. Anyway, we had a nice conversation outside of the store. We were talking about, things being done to us, that we're in a war, and they seem to, know that and understand that. But, the one fellow that I didn't actually recognize, but he had been working at the oldest hotel in Jasper, the Athabasca Hotel, at the time that I did my video there, and that was in 2016. Anyway, he told me now in 2024, he said, Monica, I wanted to support you. But if I had said anything out loud, I would have been fired. That is how big the pressure was, the mob mentality. He says he would have been fired from his job if he had said anything in support of me. I wasn't totally shocked and surprised, because I knew that. I knew that from, actually, I have a couple of loyal friends there who never turned their back on me. And they did tell me that there was a lot of pressure on them from their other friends. What, you're still hanging out with Monica Schaefer? Like, as if I was just like the evil incarnate Satan himself, you know? And the pressure was huge for people to ostracize me and not have anything to do with me. It was so big. Like, yeah, that guy, he said I would have been fired if I had said anything in support of you. So anyway, but you know, I wanted to say a couple of other things. Like, Paul, you were mentioning that you had a PayPal that got canceled, even though you never even really used PayPal for political stuff. And that's what you would call vengeance by the enemy. Like, they just want to punish you for having the audacity to call them out, to point out what's going on. That's all. Not a revenge for anything bad you've done. No, but bad in their eyes, because you're actually exposing them. I mean, yeah, that's... Oh, one more thing I had jotted down here while you were talking. So, Paul, like Flood said earlier, you've obviously done good things and hit the mark. Like, he was talking about your white supremacist label when he was looking you up. Well, one of the first smears that happened on me, like smear by association, and I think it was in a letter to the editor by one of my arch enemies, somebody who became one of my arch enemies in Jasper, that I was associating with white supremacists like Paul Fromm. This was really amazing. Early on in July of 2016 that smear by association happened. And I have a lot more stories about smearing by association too, but I don't want to get into that so much.
But if you had, in your line of work in music, if you've been associated with people who perhaps use drugs, or people who have perhaps even gone to jail for trafficking in narcotics, it'd be like whatever. Oh, okay, you know, that's the music scene. But because you associated with somebody that these characters had never met, I'm sure whoever was telling you this had never met me. And you know, the white supremacist is a term of defamation that's been concocted by our enemies, and we were told that it's bad. Well, what would be the, if white supremacist is bad, well, what would be good? Well, I guess that would be the opposite. So that would be white inferioralist. I mean, you want whites to be inferior, or you want them to be dominated?
We're guilty, right? So that is, in fact.
Unless you're into S&M, that doesn't seem right. You know, it's a term that's been invented, and we're told it's bad. I, for the record, I'd say I'm not a white supremacist, in the sense I don't want whites to rule the world. I don't want us to impose our ways on other countries. I want us, though, to have the right to be ourselves in our own country and not be invaded. It's kind of like, well, the name, not necessarily the politics, but the Irish idea of Sinn Féin, are for ourselves alone. I'm for white people. I'm for, proud of my European heritage, and I think we should all be. But it's one of those defamation terms that are used, and people who don't bother to think. And sadly, many of our fellow Canadians and Americans just don't think. They just react emotively. So bad white supremacists, oh, that's bad. Whatever that is, she's hanging out with bad people.
You know what's ironic about that? When I did my video in 2016, like I alluded to earlier, you know, you peel the layers of the onion, you learn. Well, at that time, I was still really in the dark about the bigger picture of white genocide, what is being attempted right now. I didn't even know about any of that. Like, I just had learned, okay, I'd learned about 9/11, then I'd learned about World War II history, that we've been lied to about that. But I hadn't yet kind of connected all the dots to the bigger picture of why that lie. I mean, I understand it much better now, you know, the guilt, and it starts with Germany because they're at the heart of Europe, in the heart of Europe. And then it, by extension, the whole white race is targeted for extermination by our enemy. And but I didn't understand this thing about that they're actually wanting to genocide the white race, the Kuttenhof-Kalergi plan. I don't think I'd yet learned about all that. Like, I was on a big learning curve, and maybe I was a bit slow. I just hadn't learned all that yet. So they kind of connected those dots for me by using those labels. Then, you know, then of course you learn more and more all the time. You can't help it. And now it just becomes so much more obvious. Actually, speaking of connecting dots, when I only had figured out 9/11 and hadn't yet figured out the Hollow hoax, one of the people who had previously been friends for years, and he started to go after me about, oh, the next thing you're going to do is deny the Holocaust. And me, I'm going, no, why would you say that? Thank you very much, Ben. You connected the dots for me. Later, I'm, you know, laughing about that but at the time I didn't understand he didn't make any sense. It didn't make any sense what he was arguing, because I was trying to put rational arguments to him about 9/11. And I'm wondering, what does buildings falling at free fall speed have to do with anti-Semitism, that type of thing, you know, and whatnot. But anyway, so I find that really interesting how they connect the dots for us. Like Alfred, one of his videos, he has a scene of Michael Chertoff on a radio show there in the United States. And he was answering questions about 9/11, and he was really under fire. And then he goes, yeah, it's like Holocaust deniers that, oh, you know, 9/11, whatever, truthers, Holocaust deniers. So Alfred used that and said, oh, thank you very much. Like reverse engineering 9/11 to better understand the Holocaust, you know. So I used that recently for a story in Canada going on here with the so-called unmarked graves at the schools. And I did one of my radio shows about that, reverse engineering this unfolding lie that's unfolding right before our eyes, that, you know, Canada committed genocide against the Indian children in the Indian residential schools. You've all heard about the mass graves, right?
Yes.
So how reverse engineering that lie, which is right in real time before our very eyes, to better understand how they concocted and then maintained the lie of the Holocaust. So, but anyway, I want to, is this a 2-hour show? Because I want to make sure we get to talk about Leslie.
Oh, yeah. We have all kinds of time. And I think that, yeah, I am going to bring this back around to Leslie. But this is actually good framing, because this is a part of the reason this is just another example of an ongoing and escalating system of worldwide oppression by governments and elites against white people. And Leslie Borey, if we were to actually go forward in time just a couple years, then we run into the COVID situation and what happened to Leslie. And I've got a couple messages that Dave sent me on Telegram that I think he got from his phone call. I got about a 3.5-minute message where he talks about the conditions in the prison that he's in. And then maybe I've got another one that's about 12 minutes, I think, on Leslie and his plans after he comes out. But I do want to bring it back around to that. But we're not in any big hurry. I have 2 hours scheduled, but we can go as long as you guys would like to stick around. I'm more than happy to do, to go along, as they
say. Okay, I'm going to mute myself and turn off the camera. And I have to go put another log on the fire, literally. So I have to stoke the furnace. I've got wood heat here. So I'll just step away for a minute or so.
No problem at all. No problem at all.
That's just so white of her. Like, she can't suffer a little bit like the rest of the people. She has to be warm. All right.
Dave, it's 20. You told me that it's 20 degrees where you are in Florida right now.
It was in the 20s. Yeah. This morning it was in the 20s, the upper 20s. And Yeah, the frost is all over, was all over the car.
How do you survive that?
Did you get out your parka?
Actually, I was still in my bathrobe and in my slippers, and I walked out there and, you know, sat in the car a little bit. I kind of like the cold. You know, I'm not that – it gets too darn hot here. So,
Hello.
Yeah, but it's a nice change. Sometimes we get snow flurries here in Florida Panhandle. It's nice. It's a nice place, you know, to be.
Right on. Well, I'll tell you what, it never gets cold here, and we never have winters. It's probably been a few years since I've even seen real rain, but, wow. I do still, I miss the cold too. Like I enjoyed cold.
Yeah.
I think that white people like cold weather, and generally speaking, I would prefer that over heat any day of the week.
I hear that a lot. Yeah. It's blistering hot here. It's, especially during the summer, the humidity is killer. In fact, air conditioning was invented in the Florida Panhandle. So, you know, it came together here in the I didn't either until I stumbled on it. And there's a reason for it. I think without the modern amenities created by, you know, white inventors, it wouldn't be possible to live here.
You mean air conditioning didn't come from Africa? My God.
Right? No, it did. Of course.
Which Freudian blacks invented air conditioning?
Everything's cheap from Archie.
He's got a question for you, and I think it's a good time to ask it. I do hate to break up the weather conversation. But,
yes, we were talking about Africa and air conditioning.
Archie said, well, of course.
Yeah.
He says it is Greg Felton, and this is from Archie. Archie says, hello, fellow Canadians and Dave. So Archie's Canadian. Shout out to Archie. He says, is Greg Felton still writing books or columns? He suggested to Adam Green that he interview Greg Felton. I'm not familiar with Greg, so I'll just let you.
Yeah, Greg is. That. Yeah, Greg has written three books. One is, of course, his most well-known, his magnum opus, The Host and the Parasite, How Israel's Fifth Column Consumed America. And obviously, Greg was way ahead of his time because now – I saw a clip of, I think that was that guy, Jeffrey Sachs, on that clown, what's that, British talking head.
Oh, Piers Morgan?
Yes. And now the topic of, you know, the Israel lobby and Jews controlling everything and creating all the wars is, you know, common parlance nowadays. So Greg also put out Exploding Middle East Myths, 15 Years of Fighting Zionist Propaganda, which is a compilation of his essays. He wrote a book on SARS. Of course, COVID, you know, triggered a lot of folks to question. That was one of the big, you know, watershed events in waking folks up. And Greg was obviously, you know, angered by, you know, the con job that COVID was. And he's writing a book right now. And he's been doing it for a little while on the media and examining a few aspects and tying that into media manipulation and omission and coercion. And so, yes, as far as, you know, Adam Green, I don't know. I don't know much about Adam Green. I mean, I've talked to him in the past. I don't know if he's somebody who's, you know, aligned with the way all of us here think. Greg would do interviews at any time.
Adam's definitely got takes on Jewish supremacy, Jewish power. He's a pretty polarizing figure as well, too, because he's also, he's not shy about gunning down Christianity in its Zionist form, you know, as the Schofield Bible has put it forth. And probably other Christians too. Adam's pretty, he's pretty hardcore at kind of cracking what he believes is Jewish, the subversion of religion, particularly white religion. So he can be polarizing. I never get offended by people. You know, everybody's got kind of different views. I've seen hardcore pagans that just hate Christians. I've seen Christians that are absolutely feral towards, you know, toward non-Christians. So there's so much of that around. I generally don't get, you know, very excited by it. You know, you made a mention.
And for years we've had to deal with well-meaning people who will assure you that Adolf Hitler was a Satanist.
Right. Yes. And a Rothschild and funded by Rothschilds and all kinds of crazy theories out there. So you get used to them, I think, when you get involved in the movement. This brings up a really good point, and I think everyone has kind of touched on this. But essentially, the rhetoric that they use is strong, and they seem to be really, really well organized as far as you know, the dissemination of information. We talked about hit lists and stuff. They're very good at they're very just coordinated. You know, how your PayPal representative knows to ban you, you know, 3 days after something unaffiliated happens,
right,
in some state, you know, in the Midwest is really, really frightening. And I wish we had 10% of the organizing power that they seem to have. But I've noticed that it's their command of language. It's the way and Paul mentioned how they force you into a dialectic. They force you onto one side by taking an oppositional position, and then they make you the opposition to whatever their point is. This is a very pretty well-known tactic. But I think that we capitulate a bit to that especially when we start to use not necessarily their language, but we start to use their rules, right? We start to self-censor based on reactions that they may have because we're generally concerned about, you know, violence. Nobody wants to get punched in the face because they have the wrong political opinion, but they can literally demonize an enemy just through their use of language. And I see our side kind of, you kowtow when you allow them to dominate the conversation, when you allow them to control what words mean, when they get to set definitions, when they get to set protocol. And so that's one of the reasons I think a lot of people on our side are very vulgar. I am particularly pretty vulgar just because I won't be told what I can and can't say. And I think we kind of have to always have that in the forefront of our mind because they're very, very, they're very sinister and very, very underhanded. It's very sneaky what they do with language, but they always try to other you, and then they always put themselves on the moral high ground. And it's such an old and boring kind of tactic, but it seems to be very useful and it's very effective for them because they are dealing with Goyim. You know, they're dealing with Gentiles, people that don't know who their masters are and how to deal with them. Do you see that as well? Like it is a culture war, but it's psychological and it's psychic on the language level. Have you ever noticed that as well? And either one of you can answer. That's I would do the Giuseppe thing and just call people out, but I'll let you guys fight.
I will defer to Paul. He's been in this fight a lot longer than I have.
Well, their masters try to manipulate us or confuse us with rhetoric. And as we were mentioning earlier about the term white supremacist, to throw terms at us put us on the defensive. This may not be an exact answer to the point you were making, but it is always, well, I shouldn't say always, since my growing enlightenment, it is flabbergasted me that more people do not go after Jewish spokesmen with quotations from the Talmud and say, how can you justify this? You know, we're always on the defense of Christians. The Jews are, or some Jews are even trying to rewrite the Bible, that certain things are offensive, so it has to have to be taken out or highlighted as being offensive and shouldn't be. How dare they? And yet we have, whites in general have been so restrained in asking them how they can justify some of the wild stuff that's in the Talmud. We had a chance, you know, for that, to do that. It was very interesting at a hate law trial back in 2016, I think, or 15, I guess it was, in Quesnel, British Columbia, a fellow by the name of Arthur Topham, who had a website called Radical Press. Earlier, it had been a newspaper, but he did, he took on Zionism, and he did a remarkable satire called "Israel Must Perish." And he put the and this really is a hate book. He put the book up called "Germany Must Perish," which was written by an absolute psychotic person in Washington, D.C. in 1941, and it was well reviewed.
Yes.
It talked about the planned genocide of Germany after the Second World War. Anyway, Arthur just rewrote it wherever it said Germany, he put in Israel. Well, he was charged under the hate law for willfully promoting hatred against a privileged group, in this case, Jews. So at the trial, one of the other documents was something by, I think it was Elizabeth Dilling. Anyway, she quoted the Talmud. So the prosecution had an expert witness on Judaism. And it was first of all supposed to be the head of the former head, I think, of the Canadian Jewish Congress, Bernie Farber. But we challenged him. We said, this guy's not an expert. He mouths off a lot, but he's not a scholar. He can't. So we messed him up pretty badly. And then they had to bring in somebody else. So they brought in his sidekick, and Len Rudner. I think we got it agreed by the court that he wasn't an expert, but he certainly had opinions. Okay, fine, he has opinions. So we actually got the defense lawyer to ask about some of these passages in the Talmud, including the one where it's all right for a Jew to have sex with a child as long as she's over 3 years of age, I think, if she's not Jewish. Well, his answer was remarkable. He said, well, I'm an Orthodox Jew and I'm a family man. And I do not approve of child molestation, et cetera, all the good stuff. And he said, and his defense of this, I thought it was so lame, you want to give it a crutch, was that the Talmud is really rabbis over the centuries kicking around ideas. Okay, that's a pretty weird idea, though, isn't it? That it's all right to have sex with a 3-year-old. I mean, and that was a very lame excuse. I think he was so taken aback he didn't reach for the other excuse, which would have been mine. Oh, it's a bad translation.
It was a diversion, wasn't it, Paul? It was just a complete diversion. He went on and on and on about, oh, there's rabbis, they argue about this and they argue about that, and then just some of these things get written down. And
yes, very common deflection.
Monica, yeah, you were there. That was part of your awakening. I mean, you saw the beast with all its fangs and vile breath and so on.
Arthur Topham, in just that whole sequence of events there, his trial in 2015, that was a major, major influential event in my life. And that's when I first met you face to face in person, Paul.
What was I scary?
I wanted to run for the hills as soon as I saw you.
And then you looked around Quesnel and there weren't any hills.
I think it's very interesting that that he did a basically a mockery of Germany Must Perish. An interesting note, I've had another guest on, his name is Carl Rattle, and he's a professor of history. But did you know that the author of Germany Must Perish was actually in D.C., was the roommate of the Secretary of the Treasury at the time, who was Henry Morgenthau. And the Morgenthau plan is essentially the plan that was implemented after the war with the displacement of Germans and resulting in you know, the Eisenhower death camps, things like that. So these things do all tie together. And it's very interesting that that we still see these threads, you know, all these years later. And these things are still highly charged and racist works, like from the Jews.
And then isn't it interesting, like I did hear Paul talk about how they charged Arthur Topham for this satire. It was clearly laid out as a satire, you know, in the preamble before Arthur put this out. He was meaning to draw attention to this vile thing called Germany Must Perish by Theodore Kaufman. And so they charge Arthur for that, but he's using their words. That came up in the trial lots, right, Paul? They were saying, do you understand what a satire is?
Yeah, and I mean, we were dealing with it's sad. I'm an English, was an English teacher till the Jews got me fired. But, you know, English literature is my background. And it's pathetic dealing even with a court system that doesn't get satire. You know, it's a satire. It's not meant to be taken. It's not calling for the destruction of Israel. You've got to read it in context. I mean, on some levels, it was really pretty shocking.
Interesting hypocrisy in that they don't understand satire, but they can view the Talmud as just commentary between rabbis on Jewish Jewish religion and Jewish religious teachings and writings. So it's funny that one is abstract and acceptable. The other is fairly, universally known, but the court doesn't recognize that, right?
Very interesting. And so to draw attention to that book, Germany Must Perish, you know, why would they not have called that hate speech? No, I mean, and I have to say it, when I pointed this out to some friends or former friends in Jasper about, because this was before I did my video, so I was still on good terms with them, but I was trying to promote Arthur Topham's case as, look, this is a fight for freedom of speech. If he loses this, we all lose, no matter if you agree with him or don't. But this one guy, he said to me about this, you know, but that Germany Must Perish. So I pointed out the satire of it, and what Arthur was trying to do is draw attention to that. And my former friend, he says, well, look what Germany did with that, though. So he just didn't get it. Like, oh, because his he says, oh, well, German, you know, Hitler, he told people about that book, right? I think that a lot of Germans became aware about that book. And so
Goebbels used it, yes, as propaganda, actually.
Right.
He got a hold of it and gave it to the troops. Yep.
Yeah, so that they would really fight, like, oh my goodness, this is what we're fighting against. We better give it our all. Like, we're going to fight this if it's the last breath we take, which was in many cases exactly what happened. I mean, they really gave it their all, the German soldiers. They knew what they were fighting. They knew what they were up against. And, you know, so, and you could say they saved half of Europe anyway.
They bought us at least a century, in my opinion. They bought us time, and they sacrificed everything for that.
They did.
Yeah.
It was interesting that, the they knew what they were fighting for. What they would face if they lost was genocide. Well, okay, it didn't quite work out exactly that way. But what was done to the German people, and I think Monica would be able to speak better to that than I, but there was a planned demoralization campaign to go on after the war. The idea was that Germany could never rise again because Germans would so hate themselves. Well, okay, East and West Germany did reunite, though not the occupied territories like Ostpreussen and West Prussia and Pomerania and the Sudetenland and so on. But Germany certainly revived economically, but spiritually they have been demolished and crushed by the sort of thing that would get you flung in prison if you did that to a child. The just absolute abuse of the German people, the inculcation of self-hatred. You know, you wouldn't be allowed to tell a child you're stupid, yeah, and slap them around, and everything you do is wrong, and you're rotten. Well, I guess if you're a parent, I guess you can't say this, but say an adopted kid, and your parents were scum and rotten too, and you'll never amount to anything, and you're evil. You could probably go to jail for treating a child like that. That's what Germany is being, how Germany is being treated from the top since 1945, and by plan. This doesn't just happen.
I summarize it in the, I call it the 13 words. We all know the 14 words, right? But the 13 words are this: Germany was bad, now Germany is good, and you are making Germany bad again. This is kind of, I'm paraphrasing and I'm summarizing what our cousins screamed at Alfred and me when they viewed my Sorry Mom video a few days after it was put out onto the internet, after we made it.
This is a priceless story.
Yeah, so Germany was bad, so we all know, okay, the Holocaust, right? Germany is good now, meaning, translate that, we've opened, you know, we're taking all these refugees and we're so good now. We're taking care of all these people who are coming here, all those poor people. And you're making Germany bad again, speaking to Alfred and I, because we're saying, hey, this didn't happen. And see, the inference there is that this could lead to the next Holocaust, you know, our attitude.
Right. That's the next Hegelian rhetorical trap, right, is to set up a simple dialectic and put you on the wrong side of it so that they can take the high ground and then use that against you because they don't have any other political capital. We spent a lot of months on this show audio booking John Ware's book. We haven't done other losses quite yet, but that's on the list. But the real atrocities were committed, you know, after the fall of the Reich, and tens of millions of Germans were eliminated, either through starvation or through the Rhine-Meadows death camps or through exile from all the European countries. Yes, Germans were absolutely wholesale, essentially genocided. I mean, they've done a really good job, and it's caused the kind of damage and trauma that takes generations to. You know, and now we see the manifestations of this in their complete capitulation to foreign invasion, to Jewish domination, and speculative, economic oppression as well. So, it's a very bad thing to lose to these people, and it's unfortunate that they did. But this is also things that Leslie covered in his famous video before he was picked up and put in jail. I think this might be a good segue to kind of to bring it around to Leslie. So we've outlined kind of who our guests are and some of their background. And definitely, I think we could go into some of that more in future shows. But to bring it back around to Leslie spilled the beans on all of this on his little podcast one night as Canada was locking down for COVID, or convid, as Dave calls it. And Leslie, 2 days later, I think, has disappeared. And my friend here makes a video because he saw Leslie's video and he thought, man, this guy is really, he's really based. He's naming the Jews about everything and going into a lot of detail. And then obviously in retrospect, Leslie got into a lot of trouble for this. And so now 2 years later, we find ourselves here. Leslie has still not stood trial yet. He's still incarcerated, and he's being held in what I would assume is some sort of gladiator school for people that are awaiting trial. And he's been in contact is he in contact with all three of you regularly or
yes.
Okay, good.
I have a whole file folder full of letters, and he's actually written some books in prison, but I would call them booklets. Two of them I've published on my website. I should point that out to people. Look on freespeechmonica.com, and Monica is spelt with a K. So I'm going to tell you the titles of those books. And they have some meaning. Well, obviously, but you'll know what I mean here. The first one is 25,000 bullets for wife and country. Wife and country, 25,000 bullets for wife and country. I've published that. Book two, 25,000 bullets for men of action. I've published that as well. I'm working at typing out book three, and I did let that task slide for quite a while, but doing this podcast with you all is really motivating me. Get on it, Monica, get on it. Like, it's a lot of typing. But anyway, book three is 25,000 bullets for Sopharim 15. So Sopharim 15 is the part in the Talmud. I think that's the one where it says all, the best of the Goyim deserve to die. I think that's the one.
Okay.
And I think, I'm not positive. And book four, it's a shorter one. 25,000 bullets for money. It's a Canadian Patriot Money Handbook. And on that subject, Les Borey is very, very knowledgeable. He's obviously studied what they did in Germany to, you know, the sort of the miracle of the economic miracle, as yes. many people around the world recognize that Germany rose out of the ashes from after World War One, after Adolf Hitler came to power and changed the structure of money. Is hugely important. So he writes a lot about that in his letters, and each letter is so good. I've published second last one I published recently. I think I published some of his letters before that, or portions thereof. I kind of had planned, if we have time, I could read out of his latest letter. Of course, now there's no mail. We've had a month of a mail strike already here in Canada. So that's really bad for our political prisoners, because they don't have any other means. Well, although I stand to be corrected, I was so surprised the other day to hear that I tuned into one of your shows here and found out that he was talking on the phone with Dave Gahari. So that's great. I'm going to stop talking.
I have a
now.
Couple messages, actually. I'll tell you what, I'll play one right now. It's 3.5 minutes long, but he's describing the conditions in the prison. And then I've got another one that's about 12 or 13 minutes. In fact, it might be good to play for a break if you guys want one. But I think he outlines a little bit of his, just a little bit of his economic plan after he gets out. So he does have plans. He's not wasting his time while he's incarcerated. The man is deep in thought.
Just before you play that, I'll just give a little bit of background for the listener who has maybe no clue about anything more about Leslie Borey, other than that he's calling out, you know, the enemy and speaks very clearly, like, you know, clear language, what's going on. He ran many, many times, like, he calls himself a politician. Not that he's ever been in office, but he has run in many elections, but as an independent, always as an well, he might have run in some party. Paul, you'll know more about that at some point, but mostly he was always running as an independent. And so he does call himself the only honest politician that he knows of. Of course, he's never been elected. Wonder why.
Direct correlation, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll put this on right now. This is Leslie, and this is him describing his situation where he's incarcerated currently. And I think I can play this without causing an audio loop.
Hi, Dave. I'd like to thank you very much for promoting my cause. And also I'd like to thank Monica Schaefer and Paul Fromm for doing the same thing.
That's the wrong one. That's the long one. That's the longer one. Now I'm going to have a loop. Now I'm going to have a loop.
That was nice, though, that little clip. That was really nice.
Yes, it was. I got a different one here. I was going to play. I apologize. I plan these out
as an intro. That could serve as the intro.
I made the mistake of unmuting the wrong software. Okay, so now we're back. This is the one where he talks about prison life.
So I've been charged with threatening Justin Trudeau, threatening police, threatening Jews, improper storage of ammo, incitement of hatred 1.0, incitement of hatred 2.0, and advocating for genocide, of all things, for advocating, you know, against people that want to kill all of non-Jews in the world. It's crazy. All right, so that's what I'm charged with. And I've been in here since February 13th. I've been in custody. I've been in Maplehurst since the 14th. My trial is on January 6, 2025, and the conditions in this place are just completely inhumane. This place is meant to create a situation where people plead guilty and not just live comfortably while they're waiting to go to trial. This is supposed to be a place that they hold innocent people in that are innocent until proven guilty. The violence in this place is off the charts. It's like Mad Max in this place. We wipe, you know, blood off the floor every week in this range at least. I see, you know, daily there's incidences where the guards have to rush down the halls and, you know, and stop people from getting killed in here. Medical care is absolutely terrible in this place. The guards know it as well. You know, dental care is terrible as well. It's just amazing. Like, when they do see, it's one thing, but it takes forever. You're going to suffer for a long time. There's all kinds of spiders and things in here. It's amazing. I never even heard of this before, but spiders have been causing a lot of infections. It's almost like a snake bite where people's legs and limbs swell up to the point where they can almost lose their limbs because they're full of pus. It's amazing. It's so dirty in here. We try to keep it clean, but they only give us a certain amount of clothes. They don't give us a whole lot of changes to clothing. We went for 4 months without having our bed sheets changed. You know, we don't get much yard. Last year, we got 24 hours of fresh air in the year. They lock us down all the time in a cell that's 8 feet by 10 feet wide that has three people in it. It's only meant for two people. So they put three people in a cell that's made for two people that's just a bit bigger than two pieces of plywood put together. It's unbelievable here. This is amazing. I mean, the people that run this, I mean, we should bring the death penalty back, not only for the COVID massacre perpetrators, the vaccine murderers, but for the people that run this prison. And even the guards see it. I mean, they're powerless. They come in, they do their job. But there's not much that they can do. And the people just keep accepting prisoners here instead of letting people out on bail. You know, I mean, I should be let out on bail, but they didn't do that. Albeit the conditions would have been pretty severe, and I wouldn't be able to make this call right now. So I'm kind of happy that I'd happily suffer if I can get the word out, put it that way. All right, so things are terrible in this prison. The food's shitty. It's absolutely terrible. It's just, some of this comes with mold on it, and it's people are getting sick from the food sometimes here as well. I saw a person here from Iraq, and he talked to me, and he said that he complained about this prison. He says things are better in Iraq and their prisons. I was just shocked to hear this. You know, it's amazing. I mean, I know it's bad here, but wow. So, I don't know what else I'm forgetting here. I mean, there's a lot of things that we don't get to talk to our loved ones very often because we're locked down so much. And it's just, it creates a lot of tension, a lot of violence in this prison. It's amazing. So.
And that's his take on, that's his current situation where he's being held. Now,
you know, I just want to say something here. We always had heard, when we were growing up or whatever, like, oh, the prisons in some countries are so bad. Like, don't, you know, like some third world countries, the prisons are so bad. And I'm thinking that Canada, and I think United States as well, because I've heard some horror stories about how some of the, especially the political prisoners are being treated down there. I think we've got the worst prisons in the world. This is just atrocious. When I heard about this fresh air thing, that I know in the early weeks of Leslie's incarceration, it took a long time before he even got out into the courtyard even once. Like, it was a long time. It was they didn't get any fresh air, none. And that, I had the impression, at least from my experience and hearing, you know, from other people about it, that it's kind of like international, what do you call those things that all the countries agree on, you know, universal principles or whatever, that prisoners should have 1 hour of fresh air a day, always. Like, no matter what you're in prison for, or whether you're in solitary confinement or not, you know, you get your hour outside. Well, that is absolutely not followed. And in his most recent letter, he's saying, oh, we're supposed to get 20 minutes of fresh air a day. So even officially, they don't even abide by that international agreement, you could say. In Canada, this is Canada, the country that the world thinks is so, well, in the past, not anymore, but always put Canada on a pedestal. Wow, what a great country. And we were always taught we're the best country in the world by any standards. You know, we rank number one or number two or number three in any standards, whether it's literacy or great democracy and this and that. I mean, I could go on and on. This really outrages me. These conditions that Leslie Borie has been having to endure in prison in Canada. I am very upset about that. I guess you can hear it in my voice.
Rightfully
anyway.
So. It's outrageous. And you're right. There should be at least a minimum standard of living.
Leslie is being particularly punished because he's a political prisoner by not being allowed bail. Under Canadian law, let's evolve. The accused person is entitled to bail normally, on the very good, based on the belief that you are innocent until proven guilty. You shouldn't be punished by being jailed. There has not been a trial and you're being found guilty. Okay, bail in Canada is often. Too lenient. There was I saw a case just yesterday in Hamilton, the city I live in. There's a mentally disturbed fellow who beat his father severely, beat his brother, and he was arrested. And when he came before the judge said, "Well, I don't like to keep people behind bars. And besides, I think there's a holiday coming up. Don't want to keep you over the long weekend." So he gave him bail. He then went home and killed his father.
That's shocking.
It's not funny, but, I could give you numerous cases of people who've done violent deeds, even killed people, and they get bail. Maybe with some restrictions, but they get bail. Leslie Borie has done nothing. He has no criminal record. He said things. He gave opinions. And he probably hurt some people's feelings. And he's been kept in prison for going on 2 years. That is how messed up the Canadian system is. Completely messed up. If you do bad things, they can't let you back on the street fast enough. If you think bad things, they lock you up and throw away the key. When I was much younger, when communism was still in force in Russia, the way I thought was, well, at least one thing you could say about the Russians, the communists, they don't put up with crime. That just would not be tolerated. Well, then I read Solzhenitsyn, and I found out that wasn't true. The communists actually thought of the criminals as what they called a sympathetic class. And so as long as the criminals did things to intimidate the general population, that's okay. Now, you couldn't rape the commissar's daughter, and you couldn't, maybe rip off party headquarters. But if all you did was mug people and beat people and maybe even kill people, that wasn't considered so bad. And actually, from the point of view of the communists, it was a good thing. If you've got criminals making the streets unsafe, if you're a dissident, you might even be afraid to go out to an underground meeting at night for fear of getting beaten up by just some random criminal. I found that a tremendous surprise. And I see that going on with our present state. At least in Canada, the judicial system sees criminals as somehow oppressed. It's not their fault, especially if they're black. oh, they're victims of racism. If they're Native Indians, they're victims of racism. I mean, even though it's utterly nonsensical, some black blasting another black over an insult or over a drug deal that gone wrong, that has nothing to do with racism or the white man. That is what makes Leslie's incarceration particularly evil. He did not hurt anybody. Nobody is injured because of anything he said, of anything he did. And yet he's in jail, and people who do injure people, maim them, in some cases even kill them, are on bail. The Canadian justice system is hopelessly politicized and is severely screwed up.
Well, that like Davis Lerman says, this is your country on Jews.
That's a good one. I saw
that's
that.
Pretty clever. That's pretty clever. But you're right. You know, they will go to extremes to tangentially connect you to some idea of incitement toward violence, and then throw the book at you for that, while people who are actually committing violence walk the same day that they're arrested.
I have to show you this because Country on Jews. So Les Borey did a little cartoon. He's been doing some cartoons and sending them to me, and this is your brain on Jews. So he took that meme from Davis Lerman and put it into a little cartoon and calls it Brains on Jews with a Side Order of Bacon.
I told him about that Lerman. Is aphorism the right word? I don't know.
Thank you for that, Dave. And that's great. Yeah. And how it just came back to us through, we bring exactly. It right back to Les Borey, and he immediately gets to work doing a cartoon. And here's another cartoon that he did. This was his first political cartoon, he says. And what it is an elephant, a big elephant in the middle of the living room. And on the, oh, here, there you go. The elephant in the middle of the room, and down at the bottom, you've got some peanuts. And in those peanuts are things written like Russia, China, Pakistan, India, Iran. And on the elephant, you've got a few Jewish and Masonic symbols, right?
Yeah.
And it's entitled Foreign Interference in Canada. So this is a nice little cartoon that... Here, I'll move my fingers. That's in the living room.
That's
right?
Amazing. He's so much better of an artist than I am.
Anyway, there you go. I should take a photo of that and send it to you. And you can, like, I'll scan it and I'll send it to you, Flood, later. And, you know, you can use it.
That's awesome. Thank you very much.
Okay.
That's so cool.
All right.
Yeah, Les has a great sense of humor. And I was introduced to Les by the Hoaxbusters, because Diane King, Diane King does it, Jim doesn't, but Jim Rizzoli, of course, when his brother was still living, Joe and Diana Plus, they send out emails, and they list in the emails political prisoners around the world who have gone against Kike power. And I have had that list, and I had eventually finally written to a bunch of them on the list, and Leslie was one of them. And I just dug it up this morning, and the first time I wrote to him was coincidentally, yes, October 7, 2023. Which was the day that Hamas, you know, allegedly attacked Israel. Of course, they went through all their defenses like a blowtorch through butter somehow. But Leslie was locked up, like you said. He made that video February 11th. He uploaded it February 12th of 2023. And they picked him up the next day. And so this was, not too long after that, right? So 2 8 months later, And so I wrote to him and I said, and by the way, he's in Maplehurst Correctional Center, and Paul has been there.
Yes.
With some folks, you know, protesting. I don't know if you guys talked about that before I got here, but it probably makes sense to talk about that. But I said, Leslie, I've been meaning to write for you for a little while, but I finally made some time. Thanks to an American patriot who has supplied your contact info, as well as other political prisoners' info, I can write. I'm not sure what the rules are as far as receiving books or anything else, but we have several publishing companies, and I would be honored to send you whatever you'd like. They are all in English. If you have internet access, you can see what is offered there. And if not, we can mail the catalogs to you if you let us know. Looking forward to hearing from you. And so he wrote back in January, I'm sorry, October 24th. And Leslie writes long letters, as Monica and Paul know. And I read them all, you know, of course, handwritten. And he's done the drawings for me, too, which is pretty cool. And so we had corresponded back and forth. And at some point, it was in March of this year, I gave him my number. And he started to call. And so Leslie calls, you know, several times a week, maybe, I would say, let's say five times a week. Sometimes he gets 20 minutes per call. And sometimes we speak for, you know, Leslie speaks. I let Leslie speak because it's important, I think, that he speaks.
Very much. Yes.
Yeah. And so he has told me, of course, not of course, but he has told me, you know, that he's very appreciative of it because it's obviously good for his mental health. And so Leslie speaks for almost the full 20 minutes, and sometimes he'll call back, you know, another time or another time. And I usually just drop whatever I'm doing and, you know, take his call. I would never ignore his call coming in. I always pick it up. There have been maybe one time when I said I couldn't speak the whole 20 minutes because I had to do something. But he's such a sweetheart of a guy. And he's got such a great sense. Of course, he doesn't belong in there. He's told me that the guards are like, why are you here? You know, you don't belong here. He doesn't belong there. But again, this is your country on kikes. And that's why he's there. So he's very excited that this show is happening today. And he's very heartened that there are so many folks. And I, of course, read the messages from the group that you created, Flood, for Leslie. Mm-hmm. And he's really touched by it. And let me just fill you in a little bit. You might not be aware. You know, he does have an attorney, criminal attorney, and the attorney, and I've asked him, do you want me to call this guy? You know, I haven't pressured him or anything. Just, you know, if you need me to call him to light a fire under his ass, I will. But this guy is not very communicative, and he was supposed to show up last weekend. He's supposed to show up this weekend. We'll see if he does. You're supposed to, as Paul was speaking about earlier, in Canada, there's like a Canadian Charter of Rights. You're supposed to have, you know, a certain number of bail hearings throughout the time you're incarcerated. And he hasn't gotten them. He's only gotten a few. And he has asked this particular lawyer, and the lawyer is just not really responsive. He's not sympathetic to what Leslie's going through. I didn't know about the spiders until I talked to him the other day. Mm-hmm. He's been attacked there. You know, he keeps his nose. Look, he's a good white man. He keeps his nose down. He does his work. He has a great attitude. He knows that, you know, why he's in there because of the Jew. And those are my words. He knows that, you know, or he feels that if he has to serve the time, then it will potentially make him stronger because of this. And maybe he has to go through this. But he's, you know, he loves his country, Canada, and he loves America. He loves his, as he calls them, his American cousins. And he's going to keep fighting. You know, a lot of these folks in the UK and Australia, I've often queried them, why don't you get out of there? You know, because, you know, you can't talk the way that you would like to talk. And a lot of them, this is my country. You know, I'm going to stand and fight. And I think Leslie's like that. He does know that he needs to temper it a bit when he gets out. You know, we've talked about that because we don't want him back in there again. There was word, and I didn't have a chance to update that group, Flood. There was word that Leslie got from his sources that he was going to be forced to go into the prisoner's box during the trial that begins, it ostensibly begins January 6th. And he could not wear a tie, he could not wear a belt, and he could not have shoelaces. Of course, they're feigning, you know, concern for him, you know, committing suicide or something else, who knows. But he found out from his lawyer in one of the few times that the lawyer reached out to him that, in fact, he's not going to be in the prisoner's box and he will be able to wear a tie. And
oh, that's good news.
Yeah.
Yeah. He can have some dignity, right? Like this is what you say about mental health and just him being able to have a little bit of dignity is such a big deal when you're incarcerated. And even just contact with people on the outside is such an important thing to keep mentally healthy and to keep from going crazy. That I'm amazed that he's been able to retain his, you know, his charming personality. I see the guy and I just love the guy because he's so honest and straightforward and truthful. And prison, you know, this system is designed to break you, and it's important that he remains unbroken.
One of the things that I think is really helpful for him is that he is well respected among the prisoners, the prison population, and even excuse me, a lot of the guards. That's what he has expressed to me in his letters, that and they call him the prime minister, you know.
Right on. Good. We should get used to that. He wants to run for prime minister. I've heard, and I've got a 13-minute message, thanks to Dave for recording it. And he sent it to me to enhance, and I actually made a little video of it to promote this show. But he goes into a little bit of detail about his plans upon getting out, and it's pretty short, but I think it really showcases what a deep thinker he is and how he's actually spent his time on the inside applying his brain, that beautiful Aryan brain of his, to the problems of the people. Like, he really is a man of the people, and it just comes through even 2 years after going into a hole and not being heard from again. And if you guys are interested, I could play that. And it's also a good opportunity if anyone needs to take a break for refreshment.
Please do. I think it would be great.
Okay, great. Guys, this is Leslie Borey on his plans after getting out and his plans for Canada and Canadian people.
Well, I'd like to thank you, Dave and Monica, Paul, and
Just one second. I forgot I have to make this adjustment and so I don't get the loop.
You're a technical wizard there, Flood.
Well, I'd like to thank you, Dave, and Monica, Paul, and Mr. Flood there for letting people know about my situation here and letting people know that I'd like to make a difference. And I'd like to make a difference by being Canada's Prime Minister someday. And I'd like to thank all the people as well who joined Paul Fromm at those protests at the prison here, protesting for my release and raising awareness of what's going on. And all the people all over the world who are supporting me and people like me, and also who are opposing this New World Order that's been set upon us. I'd like to promote the trial also that's coming up. My trial is on January 6, 2025. I'd like to ask all the people that are attending this trial to report to others and tell them what's going on at the trial. It's really important. It might be one of the most important trials in Canadian history. After a period of time where our government tried to kill us with vaccines and they basically went against our Western culture and told us that we couldn't leave our homes because of a disease that they said would spread if people were in close proximity to one another, but their logic didn't seem to make sense the way they kept liquor stores open and things of this nature, and they told us to wear masks, which were just props. So it was clear to most people, like with a little bit of hindsight, that these measures were meant to control us and not help us and save us from a disease. And the vaccines that they forced us to take through coercion, that was backed up with Masonic police violence, that was meant to silence and force compliance of people. These measures ended up killing people. And what I did in my video was I suggested to people that we shouldn't have government like this any longer. And I recommended that they'd help me become prime minister, because I'm an honest fellow and I'd like to fix our economy with just a few simple measures that would make a huge difference. And the things that I said in my videos, I don't even believe that they're taken seriously by the police, but they used them as an excuse to come and arrest me. And that little bit of radio theater that I took part in got me landed in jail here. And they refused to give me bail. I have bail set, but I couldn't meet the conditions. Every time I brought in a suitable surety to vouch for me and to look over me to supervise my release, they disallowed these people. And these were some of the best people in Canada that came forward to vouch for me. And I'm glad that they did this. I'm flattered that good people like this would come to my aid to try and get me out of here. But my conditions would have been such that I wouldn't have been able to make this phone call right now. And I wouldn't be able to do the things that I did from this jail. Even though I didn't, I wrote letters out and I talked to people on the phone. But because, we wouldn't be allowed to communicate through a third party onto the internet, I would have got landed back in jail if I would have did these things. So I took the opportunity while I was in jail, and I used what little freedom I actually had left to make people aware of what was going on in this jail, what was going on in my situation, and what was going on in the nation. And I also made them aware of what's possible. And there are a lot of little things that people can do to make what some people seem impossible happen. And it doesn't take much for people to speak to one another and tell them about interest-free banking and how we could replace taxation with a labor-backed currency like the Germans did to replace, to fund the civil service, right? So you can have an interest-free currency backed by labor to replace taxation that would fund our civil service. And we could have the best services that money could buy. And all the money in the world is just waiting to be earned into existence, backed by the most precious commodity in the world, which is human labor, which would mean that we're printing the world's most valuable currency and benefiting from it much more than people are benefiting from that Rothschild's currency that they're buying for more than it's worth these days because of interest rates. So people need to know that money's printed out of thin air, which is the way that it's always printed, but presently they ask for interest to be paid back on this currency. And that means that if you're paying $20 for a $20 bill, you're really paying $40 for it if your interest rate is 6.5% over 25 years if it's a mortgage. And you know very well that if you buy currency for more than it's worth, you're going to go broke very shortly. And it won't take long. That's where our economy is floundering right now, because interest causes inflation. So I'm recommending to people that we don't really fix our economy, but we create a new one. And we remove the certainty of failure. We don't build it into our new economy where people are going to be foreclosed on for certain because there's always more debt than money, which is the case today. And it's a basic thing to have an interest-free currency where there's at least as much money as there is debt. And most people, I believe, would agree that that's the way to go. And having an impossible economy is no way for a Western nation to operate. And I'm also promoting Western values for freedom, prosperity, and safety from globalists, communists, Zionists, you know, Semitists, who are controlling both sides of our governments, be it left-wing or right-wing or Democrat or Republican or whatever you want to look at it, they control both sides of this. You'll notice in conflicts how they always seem to support the state of Israel, and they always preach against anti-Semitism, which is actually the opposition to communism. And we don't want communism, so if communism is Semitism, then, you know, you definitely want to be anti-Semitic. It's not being against Semites, as we see in Israel, how the Semitists, who are from Europe, these people call them Jews, themselves Jews, they're killing Semites right now. And they try to shame us with these terms, and people just have to rise above this and decide if they want to let a few words allow themselves to be subjugated by people. You know, so we can make a huge improvement in our lifestyle compared to what we have today. We can have interest-free lending, which means that you'll always know what the price of the house is that you bought the day that you bought it, which means that we won't have to have property tax on your home, so that you're no longer paying rent to a municipality. Rent can be limited to $500 a month in Canada, which is what I plan to do. Because right now we're living in a crisis where people can't afford to live. And it's going to take some simple measures to correct this. And all we have to do is overcome some words on paper that were put on there from people that came before us, or by people that came before us. And they seem to divide it up the jurisdictions in Canada to such a degree that people who vote federally don't really have as much say in the matters as they should. They say that a lot of these things are provincial jurisdiction matters, and I beg to differ. And I'm telling people that if they elect me, and if they back me up with their numbers, when the time comes to elect me, I promise that we'll take care of these things and do all the things that I promise, because the people will back me up with the force of the people. And that's what democracy is all about. Democracy is supposed to be about the majority voting to have their way and not be subjugated by a minority. And I propose majority rule in Canada. And I'm not just talking about skin color, I'm talking about a like-minded majority rule that wants to see a Western culture implemented in our country. Today, we have a situation where if a mayor in a town wants to vote against the LGBTQ agenda, they'll get fined for this. And that's completely wrong. So I propose that we get rid of these human rights commissions because they're basically opposing the basic human right of free speech and the right to decide. And in our Western culture, that goes against our beliefs. And it's time that we stand up for our beliefs in Canada. As well as our immigration problem, has been an invasion. It's not been immigration, it's been an invasion. And it's meant to displace our people that were here for a long time. The thing is, though, if people don't want to stand up for themselves, then they deserve to be displaced, no matter how unfair it is. People have to stand up for their rights in this world. No one's going to give you anything. You're going to have to do something for something. Nothing without labor. and labor is the most important thing in Canada. And we're going to value it so much that we're going to back our currency with it. And we're going to make sure that people who work will be able to live a life in our country. And we're going to lower the overhead for people by lowering their cost of living, which will in turn raise their standard of living in our country. And one of the ways to do that, after we fix the banking system or replace it with an interest-free labor-backed currency, is to reverse the flow of immigration to reduce homelessness, unemployment, and crime. We can have beautiful lives. We just have to organize and act. Each little action is doable, and if many of us do what is easily doable, then we'll be able to achieve our goal of having freedom and prosperity. And I recommend that Canadians chart their own course into the future by printing the world's most valuable currency, backed by the most precious commodity in the world, which is human labor, to replace taxation, to fund the civil service, and an interest-free anti-inflation lending system that will stop the devaluation of our currency and our savings over time, as I've mentioned before. And Canadians will not only control the printing of money, but they'll also control the debt, which means that property values and mortgage debt can be reassessed to 90s levels, which will provide immediate debt relief and make homeowners out of many people who today are fearing foreclosures because of interest rates and high taxes and high food and high fuel prices. Canadians will control the price of gas in the future if they vote for it. And gas will be 50 cents a liter to fuel our economic recovery, to end our economic emergency. So we shouldn't let these benign birth trained police terrorists who presently use violence to enforce silence and compliance from Canadians from doing their dirty work on behalf of the corrupt people who elect or hire these people or appoint these people, which is the government, to stop us from getting the things that we want. Right now, they've tried to silence me, and thanks to Dave and Monica Schaefer, Paul Fromm, and Mr. Flood, the word's gotten out that Canada does have a person who's honest and has the courage to implement the policies that I promised to implement, despite any kind of risk to myself, because the Canadian people come before me. If a good leader will always put their people before themselves. As one person in the military told me, it goes like this. It goes, mission, team, then me. And I believe in that. Now, I could do without all this. I wish we were living a lot better than we are, but we're not. And someone has to do the job to be the rallying point for the nation.
I think that was it.
Yeah, it cuts off right after that. So, you know, he comes across as such a gentle, well-spoken guy, and I hope that he doesn't. I hope that he's not in any jeopardy because he still hasn't been to trial yet. No,
he's very careful about.
I noticed that.
You know, the information that he can't reveal.
He's such a fighter, though. Like he's really
he's
a fighter.
A fighter. Yes, yeah. And the reason it cuts off there is because I was in the recording. I was asking him, I was setting it up. And so I asked him to describe the conditions there and I cut that out of, you know, the interview and then and saved it separately. So there was another segment as well. We did it I think it was in the same day, but it was a different time he called. It says, you know, the similar stuff, but at any rate, I think you can hear the noise in the background, of course, and how difficult it is for sometimes he gets pulled off the phone because he has to, you know, go to, you know, like a lockdown or whatever they've got going on there or go to work. But yeah, I'm sure he'll be calling today and giving an update on whatever it is he's going through, but heck, it's less than a month if this trial does
I'm getting a little bit of a robot from you. I'm not sure if you're
mobile. You know, if they do pull it, I think. There you are. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was getting a little bit of an interference. I didn't know if everybody was or not.
Yeah, I was just going to actually ask, is it just my end? Or you were cutting out there and slowing down. The speech was slowing down. It wasn't working properly.
Oh, weird. How about now?
So about the last 15 seconds, we kind of missed the last 15 seconds.
Yes. I think I was alluding to the trial, and I had mentioned to Les that their plan might be all along just to keep him locked up incommunicado, and of course that lawyer is doing his part in that, either willfully or innocently, and then possibly, you know, the trial turns out in his favor, great, at least they sucked the life out of him for just about 2 years and tortured him and, you know, ruined a lot of, you know, aspects of what his life could have been. And then with the stigma of this and with the real world impact of what's being done to him because he dared to make a few videos and speak his mind.
That's an indication of just how weak the corrupt state really is, how fearful. Les would tell you, you know, he had, I think it was under 50 subscribers. Other people could listen, but, you know, this wasn't Fox News. And that they would go after him is an indication of just how fragile they know they really are. I find it just remarkable. There's a legal subtlety that I don't think we've ever got to the bottom of. In Canada, a prosecution under Section 319 of the Criminal Code, that's the so-called hate law. The person cannot be charged without the consent of the provincial attorney general. Well, if you look at the timeline, Les's video was on the 11th. That's a Saturday. He was arrested on the Monday. That's the 13th, I believe, and then sent to Maplehurst on the 14th. Well, over the weekend, knowing how slowly the justice system works, it's almost unbelievable that they could have gotten the Attorney General's consent, unless they were waiting for him. And I suspect that was it. I suspect they were waiting for him to say one thing beyond what he already said, and they were going to get him. Maybe this will come out at the trial.
Yep. Yeah, I think they were, as I mentioned before, lying in wait, which is what they do, to pounce.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so he did it on the 11th. He posted it on the 12th, and they got him on the 13th.
Yeah,
they wasted no time.
These birds don't even work on the weekend.
They work for the Jews.
Yeah,
and that doesn't matter what day it is.
They got the call right to shut it down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Shabbos Goy. Yep.
And the big boys called, and it was done. As you can, as the listeners can judge, Les is a very well spoken, thoughtful, articulate person, a good politician, and he. It doesn't come across as somebody screaming and ranting and raving and so on. So, I think he has a great future when he gets out. I'm unfortunately going to have to go now, but it's been great being with you all and Monica.
Paul, just before you go, is there anything? What's going on with his lawyer? Sometimes from the things that Leslie wrote, he didn't write anything bad about him, but he would just write the facts of, okay, I tried to get a hold of him then, and then I didn't hear back, or he was supposed to be there, and he didn't show up, or whatever. So he's not but I, maybe we shouldn't talk about this on air. I don't
know.
No,
it's fine to talk about. No, he's just non-responsive.
It's very strange to me, and I'm just...
Yes.
But, Paul, I wonder if you have any input on that, like, in terms of why does he have this lawyer exactly? Is this somebody that was appointed to him, or how did this come
out? The lawyer worked for Dr. Sears. He is well regarded. He got, I'm not quite clear on the particulars, but he got somebody else off, I believe, on a hate charge recently. Okay. But communication just doesn't seem to be his thing. As I say, I don't want to say bad things on the air either. No. But I think he's a competent attorney, and Les has retained him. He's not
not a duty counsel or something. I'm relieved to hear that, and I guess we just want to hope and pray for that he is going to come through. I guess it was just probably very frustrating, and I know how that is when you're sitting in a prison cell and you're waiting for something to happen. It can seem like forever, and so if he's not showing up when he should have, or if he's not calling back when he should have, that can seem like an eternity. So I can very well empathize with how that would be for Les Borey in jail if the lawyer is not really communicative. Have any idea how that is when you're on the other side of the bars and you're hanging there.
Maybe
some of
should.
The other political prisoners that we've supported speak about that their opportunities to call out are so limited, and if they call and it seems to be the habit more and more of people in business is to you don't answer your phone, the level of frustration must be just incredible, where. Those of us on the outside don't know how lucky we are.
Very well, Paul, very well
Paul,
said.
Paul, did you say you had to go?
Yes, I do.
Oh, great. So you guess you can't talk about the protests.
Well, okay, just very briefly. We've had the protests. I think we're up to 8. We have them every few weeks outside the prison. As I said a bit earlier in the show, to witness that there is something wrong, in religious terms, to testify, to say, even if there aren't a lot of people around, that this is wrong. And then, of course, we video it. It goes up on the internet, and that's the real medium. But it's also to remind the prison. This guy's not forgotten. And, of course, the word gets through to him, and he knows that, too. People who've been inside prison and have been the benefits of our protests, like Dr. James Sears, who was the editor of Your Ward News, and he was sent to jail for hate. It's a phenomenon. In the prison, because most people in prison, not to be too unkind, are kind of losers. They're in there usually because of drugs or something else. They don't have friends or many friends. Their families are kind of scattered. And in many cases, they don't have very many people who care for them. Put on a protest? In fact, this other fellow, Dr. Sears, when he was in prison, two guards were talking, and he overheard them. And one said, well, Sears had people out there protesting for him today. This has never happened. The other guard said, well, it was only 12 people. The other guard said, yeah, but that's 12 more than any other prisoners ever had in my experience. So, it's a small thing, but, we give up some time, and I think it's really important. And among your listeners, one thing you could do is send Leslie Borey a Christmas card or a note. Now, I know the post office is not working right now, but it probably eventually will. And, you know, that would be so much appreciated.
That's a great idea. And Paul, I know that you've got to go, but please let our audience know how can we follow you? Is there any way that we can support you in your endeavors? And thank you for physically showing up and being there for Leslie. I know that's a big deal for him. It's a big deal for us as well. And we all love and appreciate the gestures and what you've done for him and what you do for others. And
okay, our free speech website is quite simple. It's www.cafe.nfshost.com. Cafe like a coffee shop. So I'll give that to you once more time. I should read my notes. It's http://cafe.nfshost.com. Or if you want to email me and be in touch, I have a really simple email, paul@paulfromm.com. That's P-A-U-L. At paulfromm.com.
I've got notes, and I'll make sure those are in the description to the video when it gets posted. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
And I just want to also just take my hat off and thank you, Paul, for all the work you've been doing over the years. Yes. And decades, really, like, just a hardworking man, and I've seen you in action. I know you don't get as much sleep as most human beings do because you're working so hard. So I just want to thank you publicly for that, Paul. It's just
I second that. Yes, Paul, I want to ask, how far away are you from Maplehurst?
I'm near Hamilton. Maplehurst's about half an hour on a good day. Yeah.
Well, that's not bad. Yeah. I imagine even if it was longer, you would be there.
Oh, so, yeah. And people come, they don't all live in the neighborhood. We get really good support. They're dedicated people. There are a lot of people like yourselves who really care about our people, about liberty, and about this colossal injustice that's going on with Lasbori, especially when you consider, if you went and stabbed your neighbor tomorrow and left him bloody and you'd have to be in hospital for 6 months, you probably could get bail in Canada, even if you were a 2 or 3 time loser. But if you said a bad thing about against the those who shall not be mentioned, throw away the key.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely outrageous, but we hope for the best. I'm not sure if his trial open to the public.
Yes, it'll be in Brantford. It starts at 9:30 a.m. on the on Monday the 6th, I think it's the 6th, anyway, that Monday, we are going to be there in force, and I'm and anybody who would like to, you know, get more particulars, just call me.
Say that again? Because you said the 6th, but not January 6th. You're talking...
Yes.
Yeah, January 6th.
Oh, gee, it is actually January 6th.
Oh, yeah. It's coming up now, the Canadian justice system... It could be postponed at the last minute, going on what we've been told, it will be January the 6th, 9:30, Brantford Provincial Court.
Leslie was saying that they have not allowed him to have any of his necessary materials to prepare his defense. Like no computer, no papers, none of the documents, nothing. Like, it's really... They've really hamstrung him. He's going to have to, he's a very good speaker, he's going to just have to speak. But so I don't know. I hope the it would be so great if a lot of people showed up there. And it's thousands of miles away from me. I don't think I'm going to be there. But
and you're in Canada.
Yeah, but I'm on the other end of the country.
I know,
you guys are probably closer.
You're in Canada, right? And it's still thousands of miles away.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I sure appreciate that that Paul's willing to go out there. And again, thank you. I know that you've got to go. And feel free to just close out. We can
actually, one more question. Do you think it'll be available on via Zoom? Sometimes trials are available to see via Zoom.
I'm going to find out. That's a good question. I'm going to try to put out a nightly report, a summary of the trial, as I did during
a
number of the other political prisoners.
Yeah, I think his other stuff was available via a Zoom type feature. So, yes, I think it is. It might be that's in Ontario, I guess, right? And then it's Brantford, Brantford. Is that right, Paul?
That's
Brantford.
Right.
Yeah. So I imagine, yes, you would be able to do a Google search and find out how you could view it, if it is available.
Yeah.
We have a dedicated crew of autistic fans that will definitely start sniffing that out. And if it's possible to watch the trial, then they will find a way. And maybe we'll carry that on the show as well and try to bring some more attention to this.
Okay, we'll try to do this again.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully, yes, we can have you guys back on the show and talk. Hopefully it'll be about, it'll be about something more. It'll be about him being free next time.
Yes, hopefully. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Don't forget to write him.
Exactly. His address. You want me to give his address out?
Yes, please.
Okay. So it is Leslie Borey, Leslie, or Les, whatever you want. Borey, Bory, Maplehurst, that's Hurst, Correctional Complex, 661 Martin Street, 661 Martin Street, Milton, Ontario, L, and they get a weird relative to the U.S. postcode, L9T, and then a space, 2Y3. So Lima 9 Tango space 2 Yankee 3 Canada. I think in Canada you and of course please correct me if I'm wrong, you put the Milton Ontario then followed by the postal code on the same line, is that right?
I put it on the next line.
Okay, there you go. So that's his address.
Just remembering that right now, it probably just put your ears to the ground to find out when the strike is over, right? Postal strike.
Right.
There's a postal strike. And so things, it might not be a good idea to mail it right now because it could just get lost in a shuffle.
Right.
I don't know.
And even when there wasn't a strike, one of the things, and I'll be real quick explaining this, I put pretty cool stamps on the envelopes for Les, because Canadians like American stamps. And, I put some muscle car stamps and fruit stamps. And what they do is whoever receives the mail, they give them the letter. Of course, they open it up first to make sure there's nothing bad in there besides the words.
Right.
And what they do is they cut off the stamps so he never gets to see them. So one of the times I talked to him, I said, Les, how'd you like those stamps? He never got the letter. So I sent out the exact same letter with the exact same scan of the envelope with the stamps on it. And of course, now we got the strike. So if you're putting some stamps on your envelope thinking that Leslie might be able to enjoy the different stamps from the different countries, it probably will not happen.
Wow, that's another, a total, like, that is so horrible, Canadian prison. Because I mean, every prison is going to be different, and in different countries, there's different conditions, different rules, different this, different that. But yeah, I used to plaster my mail, like, to Alfred when he was still in prison with the most beautiful stamps. I would fill the envelope with them because I'd get stamps of lesser denomination so that I'd add them all up to the amount needed. And I would decorate the whole envelope with these beautiful stamps because Canada has really nice stamps. Right. And I think they did get there because he commented on it sometimes. Wow.
Yeah, all my letters got to Alfred. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. But including the stamps. And yet,
including the stamps. Yeah.
And yet stickers were not allowed. But stamps, I guess, was different. They left those on the envelopes. But, I mean, they used to go through those letters with a fine tooth, you know, comb and whatever the expression is there. And if there was one piece of scotch tape somewhere or one little sticker, people put stickers on just for decoration into a letter, that was forbidden. That was forbidden. No. All kinds of things were forbidden. Like,
but I mean, if you want to blow up civilians, you know, no
problem. Oh, yeah, that's okay.
No problem, no problem. Yes. You know, and they said, oh, it's for safety, so that you couldn't, or you couldn't smuggle drugs in or something under those stickers, or maybe you hide a, you know, a Kalashnikov or something, some weapon under those stickers or whatever. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah, I know, it's a joke. It's a freaking joke. See you,
Paul. Thank you, guys. Well, let's see here. I'm going to definitely keep an eye on my calendar. I'll make sure that I append all this information to the video uploads when I post them. And of course, none of you guys have to go, but I know that we're way over our normal time, and so I want to be respectful. Would you mind, Monica? Do you have contacts or websites, or is there a show? Is there anything that you want to let us?
Sure.
How can we follow you and contact you and support you?
Okay. My website is freespeechmonica.com, Monica with a K. And I also have Leslie Borey's address there on the political prisoners page on there. And like I said earlier, I've published a few things from him. And then there's the Truth and Justice for Germans Society. And the website for the Truth and Justice for Germans Society is truthandjusticeforgermans.com, and that's all spelled out. Okay, so just all one word, all spelled out, truthandjusticeforgermans.com. And I have a weekly radio show now on the Republic Broadcasting Network. It's called The Flip Side with Monica, and that's every Saturday afternoon live at 5 p.m. Pacific or 8 p.m. Eastern on Saturday's one-hour show on the Republic Broadcasting Network, which their website is republicbroadcasting.org. And I have an Odyssey channel, and I'm on Gab. I'm even, believe it or not, on Facebook still. I try to put stuff out there, but most of the time it's not allowed because we're not allowed to put news articles on Facebook in Canada. But I've put quite a bit of, information out there, or good memes and whatnot. And what else? I think that's it. So, but if you go to my website, you'll basically be able to find other stuff too from there.
Fantastic. Well, it's really a pleasure to have you on the show, and I've heard of you and Alfred several times, and of course your names go around in these circles quite a bit. It's a real pleasure to have you on our show, and I want to thank you for taking the time to come and hang out with us and kind of let us know how your interactions with Les have been. And it's always great to just find another like-minded person that supports the same causes and people. And continues to speak the truth out against the world power that's oppressing all of us. And
yes,
hopefully we'll see you on FTJ Media soon. Hopefully,
I'd love to
join
there.
The FTJ family with your podcast.
Yeah, well, and it's really nice to get to know you a little bit, Flood. And I've heard a few of your episodes or maybe excerpts thereof, because I think
No,
it's great. I love the things you do with, you know, some of your sound effects and whatnot. It's a hoot. It's a real hoot. And you're on quite a lot, eh? Like, do you have a daily thing or 5 days a week, or what do you have?
It's 6 days a week in the mornings, and then at least twice a week in the evenings. I have a lot to say, and I usually do a lot of work. I do a lot of video editing, propaganda, and things like that. And so while I'm working on my computer, I'll just go live and make a show of it. It's mostly music. It's really all casual and really laid back. We don't get too serious about content and stuff, because there's some other guys that really do a much better job of you know, telling everybody what's going on and giving people the news. So I kind of like that it's casual. It's really, streaming is just kind of my break from my production work.
It's fantastic. Wow, that you're a busy man.
More than most people would believe.
He's great. He's very talented. And, you know, FTJ is lucky to have him. And yes, you need to be on FTJ, Monica.
Absolutely. Well, I'd love to. Thank you.
Well, get over there. Just do it. So
I'll talk to you later about that. How to do that. Sure. I'm not sure exactly what to do. I kind of have always, I'm not good on being a technical person. I respond to invitations to, you know, go on people's shows or do interviews with them. And then now I have this other show, the weekly show on Republic Broadcasting Network. And I've never really been good at setting something up, because I'm total Luddite, I guess. I don't know.
I am too.
Yeah. I know. I laughed about that when you told me that you
yeah, don't. Right. Yeah. If it wasn't for my wife, seriously, she's like my Q from the James Bond movies.
Nice.
You know, I'm like, she's like, now pay attention, 007. This gadget here. And I'm like, oh God, do we have to talk about that?
This is the remote control for the television.
Exactly. Eject a seat. You're choking. You know? So yeah, I suck at it. So. I'll find out how to do it, Monica. Yeah, Monica is just wonderful. Flood, I don't know if you know about her or what she went through and the book she has written. I'm not familiar if you or your
a little bit and briefly, but I think that's one of the reasons I kind of want to make more official contact. And I'd love to have Monica and
Alfred.
Yes, and Alfred on the show.
Oh, God, they're wonderful. Would it be okay if Monica just gave a brief synopsis of her tangle with...
Please do. I mean, if she feels up to it.
Yeah, before you came on, Dave, when you were still out and about there this
morning. I was taking the boy to high school.
Yeah, that's great. Anyway, Flood did get us, Paul and myself.
Kind of got a brief introduction in.
Very brief, but anyway, and I'll include Alfred in this, because Alfred, my brother, I am so blessed to have this brother that is just, I mean, he's a force.
He is.
And I say this about him very seriously, that I wouldn't be where I am if it wasn't for him. And I say that all in a good sense. Some people might say, oh, how awful that is. You went to jail and all that. No, this is all good. Like I said earlier, I am so happy that I am where I am, that I woke up to what's going on, that I understand the truth. It's so much better. Like, I would never want to unsee. Right. I think that there's very few people who would want to unsee, like just go back to, you know, that blue pill world in the Matrix or whatever and just be ignorant of everything. But anyway, Alfred, he says the same about me, which I'm very flattered by. I'm very humbled by that, because, you know, he says, yeah, we make a team basically. And, you know, he's very correct in this, that it's not just an added thing, it's a multiplier force. So he translates that to our people. He says when we start to really mesh on this, and there's more and more of us all the time that are waking up, and we work together and we support each other, that's a multiplier force. It's unstoppable. It is absolutely unstoppable. And this, his spirit is so positive and energetic in the midst of, you know, chaos and turmoil, what's going on. And in Germany, it's particularly bad. And we talked a little bit about that earlier. Still, he's just full of fire and just like, yeah, we're winning. Like, there's this biological response. This biological response is just going to be unstoppable. It's like when you are sick and you just have to vomit, nothing's going to stop you, even if you're sitting in, you know, this nice new car, or you're on the new couch, or the carpet. Doesn't matter. It's not going to stop it. When it needs to come out, it's going to come out. And this is how Alfred puts our situation right now in the world. He puts it in those terms, that there will be this biological response, that there's nothing stopping that. We are going to come out on top. I mean, I think it always is that way, that the truth is so much more. It's beauty, it's light, it's love, it's everything good that comes out on top in the end. It's unstoppable, because the other side is just, it doesn't have its own energy. That's why they are the parasite. They parasite off of us, and they don't have their own energy. No, it's a negative force. So a negative force doesn't come out on top. It cannot, it just, by the laws of physics, it cannot come out on top. Anyway, that kind of just,
you even sound like him.
I love it. You know, the Fuhrer said that my spirit will rise from the grave. And I do believe that we are seeing this happen, and that the coming man is us. It is you and me. And we will answer the call when it comes. And inevitably, we will stand up and take our rightful place in our own nations as leaders, as examples, as fathers, as friends, as a real family, a real blood and soil nation.
Yes. Yeah, so I wanted to just mention, about Alfred. So he spent 4 years in jail, starting in 2018, got out on July 1st, Canada Day, in 2022. And he was out for about 13 months, and then he went back to jail. And I'll tell you why he went back to jail. He went back to jail for 6 months for a gesture that he did in his previous jail stint in the courtyard, when there was one other guy in the courtyard with him. They were both on solitary confinement, but they don't have enough hours in the day to give everybody their own hour. And it's not like Canadian prisons where they don't even give the prisoners fresh air at all. At least in Germany, they do have that it's pretty much that the prisoners still get their fresh air hour in the courtyard. Anyway, he was talking to this other guy in the courtyard, and of course prisoners ask each other what they're in for, and Alfred is showing him that, yeah, he's just in for saying, "This is how high my dog Pavlov can jump," and does the Roman salute, the little gesture there, the straight arm gesture.
6 months, huh? Wow.
6 months for that, because some guard, he goes and shows, "Hey, Herr Schäfer, Hitler salute," or whatever, you know, Hitler Gruß in German. And the prisoner right away jumped in there and said, no, he's just showing me how high his dog Pavlov can jump. And then, but the guard didn't have a sense of humor at all. And these charges, it really grinds its way slowly through the court system. So it turns out that, you know, years later, which happens to be 13 months after Alfred was out of jail, that then they throw him back, and he's spends 6 months in the chicken shack, as Blackbird Nine likes to call it, the chicken shack. So for doing that gesture. And I always say, look, if there's a crime, there should be a victim of a crime, right? There's no crime if there's no victim of a crime.
That's right.
And who is the victim of this crime? I mean, there obviously it's not a crime to do a straight arm gesture anyway, but even if there was some kind of a evil act that he did, like, let's say in a sane world, who was the victim? There was no victim. It's like, it's insane.
What a joke. And what about you, Monica?
Like what?
Like, oh, what happened to you?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. About that? Right. We did talk about that a little bit. But you know, it was that video, "Sorry, Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust." And yeah, I do have a book by that. That's the one there. Same title.
That's at TBR?
Yes, the Barnes Review. Sorry, I should have said that too when you asked me about websites and whatnot. So, TBR, the Barnes Review.
I think it's just Barnes Review.
BarnesReview.org.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Or com. Yeah, sure. Remember, I wrote for them for many years.
Yeah.
And I'm very close with the editor of the Barnes Review, Paul.
Oh, so, good.
Yes, you are. Yes.
Yes. Okay, good. Thank you so much, Dave. You're good. Good man.
Dave's good. He's good at shilling, too. Yes, he's always making sure. That's exactly why I love having Dave on the show, because he's a practical man, and he's very thoughtful, and he's always, you know, he's always thinking.
Very thoughtful. Very, very thoughtful. Very kind. And just, you know, like I saw that recently when you did that really with Paul English, the very, very nice tribute to
Tom Goodrich.
Thomas Goodrich, thank you.
Yes.
Very that sad. Was very, very sad. And you know, you had that very intense exchange with his wife during the last months of Thomas Goodrich's life. I mean, this all, it's not just compassion. It all takes time. And you also must be a very busy man. Maybe you don't sleep either, Paul.
I really don't do much, Monica.
Flood, what's that?
I really don't do much.
I think he's also a very humble man.
Oh, yeah. You just twiddle your thumbs all day.
That's it. I play solitaire and free cell. And, I'll tell you, all of us are busy. I know Flood is probably the busiest of all of us. He's constantly working. He's constantly streaming. And he's constantly putting out incredible content. And
I can tell you what I did last night.
Yes.
I made Animal Farm into an audiobook.
Just, oh, wow.
Just sitting around bored. I had a half an hour. I thought, I'm going to just make Animal Farm into an audiobook.
That's what I'm saying. He doesn't stop.
Wow.
And just putting this together today is so vital to all of our successes, because here we are, three separate people, me, you, Paul. We all know what we know as it relates to Leslie and beyond. And because Flood put it together, it is available in a form where it will have a positive impact on the listeners and the viewers. So we could, it's literally like a book, right? We all have a bunch of books on our shelves, and they're just sitting there. They're not moving. They don't do anything.
Don't they jump out at you and
well,
hit you?
Okay, you're right. You got me. Yeah. But I mean, when you open up that book, right, that's a whole world right there. And it's the same with this type of a show. We have three books: Monica Schaefer, Paul Fromm, Dave Gahary. Flood took those books off the shelf, put them in this show, and there you go.
And Leslie, you'll use your voices to sell coffee. That's right.
Now, wait, before we go, I have to say, what Flood does, and Monica, I don't know if you do this on your show. I guess we'll find out on FTJ if you come over. And not to say that you should leave RBN. I'm just saying that you could stream at different places. But, you know, FTJ and RBN and these other outlets are not supported commercially by advertisers, of course. And they're listener-supported, non-commercial. Like the radio station I was on in New York City, part of the Pacifica Radio Network, it's listener-supported, non-commercial. And the way that it survives is from the listeners' donations. So I would do this, since I didn't shill anything or I didn't pitch anything except for Monica's book. I would ask the listeners and the viewers to make sure that you, before you exit the building, that you reach into your pocket and put a couple of shekels in the hat of the fellow who's standing by the door, and make sure Flood can continue his great work. And you know how to do that.
Yep. Actually, you know what? I would almost defer any donations to, I mean, Paul actually spends a lot of resources. I'm sure gas is not cheap where he's at. He spends a lot of time organizing these protests, if he's physically going around to these places and he's planning on going to the trial as well and reporting on that, please, instead of supporting me, support Paul and maybe take that $5, go get a Christmas card and write Wesley Borey in prison, please. That would be wonderful.
Yep, absolutely. So thank you, Flood, for putting this together.
Well, thank you both.
Thank you, my dear, beautiful, wonderful Monica Schaefer, for all that you have done and all that you continue to do.
Well, I want to just write back at you. Thank you very, very, very much. And thank you, Flood, for putting, like Dave says, this is great that we had this opportunity to highlight Leslie Borey, his situation, where he's at, pay some attention to that. It really, really is important that we pay attention to our political prisoners.
Absolutely. And I'm looking forward to you being on Flood Show, to talk about what you've been through.
Absolutely. I'm going to be writing out, once I get these uploads up, I'll write out some emails, and I'm doing some booking now for the month of December. I know it's a pretty busy month for a lot of people, but I do actually have a series of shows where I call them the Big Brain shows. Dave's been on several of them, but I love to sit down and just have a conversation with people who are aware, who are willing to talk about and help other people and help guide other people through, either by their own experiences or their own technical ability or just whatever they bring to the table. But we all bring something to the table. And I think the more that we come to the table, the more that we have these kind of discussions, like you mentioned, it is a force multiplier, and we become far more powerful as a group than we are individually atomized.
Oh, she's definitely a big brain.
Yep. So the Monica Schaefer Big Brain Show, I'll be sending an email about that, and hopefully I can get you scheduled, and no pressure for December.
I'm always around.
Cool. We'll do a Christmas show.
You see how quick he is?
Yeah.
Wow. See, you're always right. Okay. We'll do a Christmas.
Oh dear. Yeah. I don't have to cook a turkey this year. So there you go.
Fantastic. I just love that anybody that's just down to go and do something like that, because it's what you got to do. Like, you can't really plan everything out, and some of the best things just happen spontaneously. And since I've started doing this show, I've learned to just seize the moment, if you get the opportunity. And if it makes good entertainment for people, that's great. If it's even more than that, if they learn from it, then that's even better. And that's the kind of, that's the kind of media that we want to make.
For sure.
Thank you so much, both of you. And of course, Paul has left, but I sure appreciate his contribution and his work. Yes. Wow.
Yes. Yes. He's a giant in this arena, for sure.
Truly.
Boy, according to the ADL, he's pretty, he's a bad dude.
Oh, he's
bad. He's real bad.
Well, one day we'll all have ADL pages.
Yes. We can only hope.
Thanks, guys. And I'll go ahead and I'll shut this down now, and I'll probably play a couple songs for the audience, and then we'll call it a stream. But thanks again for coming on the Flood Show. Hail victory.
Hail victory. Merry Christmas to you and to Monica and to all your listeners.
Thank
Likewise,
you.
Merry Christmas.
Also, and happy winter solstice coming up soon.
Yes.
All right. Let's see here. Now, how do we kick these people out?
I think I could hit leave in the top right corner.
Yeah, normally I cut people off, but I don't think I can do that with...
I'm just going to hit leave. Bye, guys.
Me
go
too.
Ahead.
Cut
me
off.
Bye-bye. These guys are... It's nice. It's such great people. I mean, we have such great people on our side, and they're all very thoughtful and very kind, and generally they're intelligent people. They're people of high value. They're people of a moral character. The kind of people that I like to hang out with. And just like you out there at home, you are all racist white supremacists. All right. Now, we can't end the show on an interview, right? So I have this unreleased track from Kill Your TV featuring Leslie Borey. This is called Canada Bros. Do enjoy.